You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
My name is Max. My world is fire and blood.
Why are you hurting these people?
It's the oil, stupid.
Oil wars.
We are killing for gasoline.
The world is actually running out of water.
There's the water wars. Water wars.
Once, I was a cop. A road warrior searching for a righteous cause.
The terminal freakout point.
Mankind has gone rogue, terrorizing itself.
Thermonuclear skirmish.
The earth is sour.
Our bones are poisoned.
We have become half-life.
As the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken. It was hard to know who was more crazy. Me. Or everyone else.
Terrible gibberish. Splintered memories looming up out of the time fog. Just press play.
Tonight, any protester, any instigator, or agitator will be made example of.
This system makes of us slaves, without dignity, without debt.
We'll make you a millionaire while you're sitting here from 1 minute to the next.
What else would I do with myself?
So what makes you so high and mighty? Will you tell me that? Didn't you ever try looking at your own eyeballs in the mirror?
Why not me? Why not? A guy can get anything he wants as long as he pays the price.
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
It's a new year, it's a new show. Episode 156 of Cinema Crespediso is here. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo. How's it going? Give me a little bit of applause. Turn my mic down. Doing a couple things at once. It's all good.
You're hot.
Hot mic. Here we go. Third year anniversary show. Congratulations to us. Happy anniversary, Drewster Cogburn.
Happy anniversary, Chris.
That's my co-host, Drewster Cogburn. Drew!
We're officially 3 years old. Only 18 more years until we can drink?
Right. Sure. Speaking of that, this show is powered by Orange Blossom Pilsner. The bees need to work. We're drinking some Vice Baby.
Delicious.
It is delicious. It's the best. Always. I'm always so happy.
Great breakfast beer.
Breakfast beer. It is. It's a brunch. It's brunch time. It's lunch. It's a lunchtime beer now.
Whatever. It's.
But you know what?
It's time to drink.
I'm not above drinking these for breakfast.
No.
Because that's the kind of person I am. He was here for our first anniversary show. He was here for our second anniversary show. He is one of our favorite guests, and that's why he is back, ladies and gentlemen, to kick off another year with us. The man behind Orange Blossom Brewing, your favorite, our favorite, Tom the Beer Guy is here. Tom!
What's up, everybody? They just love me because I know nothing about movies.
Oh, that's not true at all.
I used to work on movies, so gives me a little clout, I guess.
You carried a bag of gasoline past Mel Gibson. you could have ended it all right there.
Those were the days, baby.
Those were the days. You helped blow up City Hall for Hollywood. Tom, you're a legend around these parts, buddy.
Well, mostly in the beer aspect. I was behind the scenes. I was behind the scenes in film and television. You know, Orlando really tried hard to be Hollywood East.
Yeah, they did.
And L.A. finally just said Orlando was where TV shows came to die.
Yeah. So. Unless you were doing Nickelodeon production. Unless you were doing Guts, then it was over.
Oh, dude, I did some cheesy TV.
Do you have it, Chris? Yeah.
Guts?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Cheesiest.
What was the cheesiest one?
That's My Dog.
That's My Dog.
Oh, my God.
Did that even make... How long did that last? That was an actual show?
I think they got a couple seasons out of it.
A couple of seasons? That's unbelievable. I think Drew's looking up That's My Dog right now because he looks incredulous that was even a thing. But you know what also sounds like perfect Orlando fodder?
OMG. It was something.
This is the kind of stuff that we can do here. And now there are like movies and shows set in Orlando, but they're shot anywhere else but here. Well, it happens all the time now.
You know, that it's got such a lot of competition for people luring production to their city. Georgia has really crushed it.
Georgia's
and they've offered so many tax discounts, so many breaks, that Georgia really gets a lot of production just because of that. What's a good one? The Walking Dead Yes. Does everything right out of Georgia, and you know they got a sweet deal.
That was a huge coup for Georgia, too, because it makes them look great that they can be a state that has productions on this scale and this successful, and they can make it look good.
They had 100 episodes of that fucking crazy 100 show.
100 episodes, and that's my dog!
One of them starred Rin Tin Tin, Canine Cop.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Wow. Really. It was like a game show for dogs and their owners, so like... The dogs.
No, it wasn't yes. a game show for dogs and
yes,
owners.
Yes, it was. That's My Dog is a television game show which aired on the Family Channel in the United States. Two families and their dogs competed for prizes in games and stunts oriented towards the dogs. It aired between September 1st, 1991 and September 30th, 1995 for a total of 100 episodes.
In Orlando. What the hell did you do on that show? Were you the dog wrangler?
No, not at all. I don't do dogs. I was a grip yeah. lighting guy on the set.
Oh, man. Man, that must have been a crazy set.
Oh, yeah.
I can't show me dogs.
We really tried back in the day, man. We really tried to give it a go. And we had some reasonable pictures come through here, too.
Sure. Parenthood shot a bunch of stuff here. I mean, it's silly when you think about it now, but Ernest Saves Christmas. Ernest was hot at that time. That was his third movie, I think.
Yeah, Ernest was getting some stuff in here.
Yeah. The old Jim Varney, rest in peace, man. I miss that guy.
Sleaky. Is he dead?
Yeah. Oh, what did he die for years, Tom? Lung cancer.
He must have been a smoker. He was a heavy smoker.
A heavy smoker.
Yeah, you can kind of see it in his skin and his Absolutely. Features.
Yeah,
know?
It's all the craggle and everything. And he even did some, after he got sick towards the end, he did some like, in the style of Ernest PSAs, anti-tobacco, anti-smoking PSAs.
Oh.
And there's footage of him like coughing his lungs out between takes because he's...
Dying of lung cancer.
Dying, yes. Yeah. So, didn't Yul Brynner do the same thing?
Probably.
It's like, hi, I'm Yul Brynner, and I'm dead now. And he recorded a commercial that aired after he died, and talked about how he smoked and he had cancer.
Yeah, I was working on Psycho 4 when, what was the name of that fellow? He was dying of AIDS at the time. Everybody knew it.
Perkins.
Anthony Perkins, yeah. He was dying of AIDS on Psycho 4.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
It was kind of sad, yeah.
That was done here in Orlando.
That was the first movie shoot I ever got on.
And that was Universal.
Right.
Which makes sense.
Because they had the Psycho Hill. They had the Psycho House on top of the hill.
Yeah, which, man, I missed that attraction at when they let people go into that building over there at Universal and they showed you like the moving sets and stuff and the walls. They used to have more attractions at Universal Studios that were like production
oriented and such.
Yeah. Now it's just like, here's a Transformers.
And they've got the sound stages, and you know, they tour you through the sound stage and show you how it works, but
yeah.
They don't seem too concerned about that anymore.
I don't even think the only one that would be doing that is the Nickelodeon Studio section. And do they even do that tour anymore?
I don't know.
I remember when I went on the tour when I was a kid, there was an episode of Clarissa Explains It All being filmed. That's right awesome. Then.
It was being filmed.
Yeah,
was
right then.
Joan Hart
there.
Was there.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
It was. I remember because you were watching. It was Melissa. It was a scene with Melissa Joan Hart and the kid who played Ferguson.
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know who that little fucker was.
Don't even remember the MJH.
The little red-haired bastard. The
little redhead kid. No, I remember redhead kid. Yeah, but yeah, he used to have a shot. Good old Orlando, and now it's man. But you know what? There's still infrastructure here. There's tons of talent here, especially with Full Sail. Plenty of young, hungry people willing to work.
They do so much work already.
And yeah. Production has changed so much in the last decade or two. It's so there's so many channels to fill.
Yep.
There's so much work to be done aside these feature films. It used to be the feature films and
the three
networks, TV shows are where you had a chance to work.
Right.
But now there's opportunities to work all over the place.
Even for internet, there's the internet show. I think it's on Amazon or something like that. The Hot Wives of Orlando. They did a season of that. It's, you know, a spoof comedy series.
Oh, okay.
Based on like the Real Housewives of, you know, whatever. They did Hot Wives of Orlando. And the whole thing was shot in California. You know?
Of course.
And it was for you guys could have flown out here and shot some stuff and it would have looked at least authentic. And then you could have made some like real jokes. Orlando.
Yeah, I remember it was funny. We had a bunch of LA guys come in. Dolly Parton is just scared to death of earthquakes. And I don't know if I've told this story before, but if I have, it's a year ago and everybody's probably forgot.
Absolutely.
What?
But Dolly Parton was, they signed her to do this little sitcom. Uh-huh. And we did we had like 8 shows in the can that really looked good. We had a nice little sitcom that never saw the air.
Oh, shit.
It was called Heavens to Betsy. And it was where she had this black dude that was like her guardian angel and only she could see him. So that, you know, that's typical sitcom.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is like 89, 90?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
sure that's and, that sounds right.
And she Dolly was scared to death of earthquakes, so she won't go to L.A. She might go to L.A. for the afternoon or something, but she ain't spending any time in L.A.
Oh, wow.
And so that caused the production to shoot in Orlando.
Wow.
Which drug all those jackasses from L.A. out here, and they fucking hated it. They didn't want to be here for anything.
I could imagine,
And they actually killed the show. There were fist fights in the writer's room. It was crazy.
Oh, because of the tension of just being in a place they didn't want to be in. They're like, screw this. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, and they undermined the show. And it was a shame, because we had some really nice episodes.
I could see that, though. I could see easily 89 Orlando being a little more podunk than 2015, 2016 Orlando. just a little bit more, you know what I mean?
Let me see. What year did, I think, MGM open in 84?
The Disney MGM?
Yeah, and 85 was when I did my first TV show there, Let's Make a Deal.
Nice.
Actually, Dick Clark is the one that was a producer. He's the executive producer on it, so it was quite a production.
That is awesome. I still watch Let's Make a Deal when I can.
That was door number three, baby.
Always. Man, we've stolen it from Let's Make a Deal on this show.
Of course.
Ended with this. Family Feud was shot here forever in Orlando at Universal Studios. And then Steve Harvey became the host. Did one season here and then had the show move to Atlanta because that's where he lives.
What is that? He's got that kind of clout, I guess.
That sucks for Orlando. Actually, it was shot in Orlando for like maybe 3 years.
It's all right. We got that that shitty wrestling that's filmed here, right?
TNA is filmed here sometimes, and NXT isn't filmed, but they do that whole wrestling show production out there at Full Sail, which is actually that's a pretty big deal for the wrestling world.
So I did WCW for quite a few years, and it was funny because growing up, there wasn't nothing I thought sucked more than wrestling.
You end up working production for it.
That's
awesome.
And I looked at wrestling on TV and just shook my head and go, oh, we like, are something.
Look at these dummies.
And then here I get a job with them. I ended up doing probably 300 or 400 episodes of WCW episodes.
Like the Monday night shows.
Episodic at that point. Yeah. They actually had like a weekly thing, and we'd come in twice a year and we'd shoot like 25 shows in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Shoot like 25 shows in 2 weeks, and that would cover half the year, and then half a year later we'd come in and do it again.
This is the Ric Flair Sting days.
Oh, I met all those bananas.
They are all crazy. That's so funny that you hated it so much. I loved wrestling growing up. I watched it so much. I was such a sucker for that stuff.
Well, it was only perfect that, you know, that's where I end up is where I despise.
And you hated it so much, but when you were there, that's like kind of a golden era, too. That's when it was really good.
I was getting a nice check, too. That was why I was there.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, hey.
They paid me well.
You pay most people enough money, they'll do plenty
of things.
Just
about anything. Yeah.
But I was a spotlight operator during the shows. That's what I would do. That's nice. Man, I'd just look out over the audience and go, man, the median IQ out there is so fucking good.
Especially as the age goes up, that IQ seems to be going down. Like, the smartest people in the room are the kids, for sure. Like, they still have hope. They still have hope, Drew. Let's bring some production back to Central Florida. Why don't we? That'd be pretty cool.
Seriously.
Get some money and some. But you know what? If there's no incentives, if the government doesn't want it to happen, then it's not going to happen. So Louisiana will keep getting all the jobs in Georgia.
They've been picking up a lot, right?
They have been. And there's actually, I read some things online, some people are like, screw these incentives, why are we giving all this money to the Hollywood people, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, don't get it. You don't get it, you don't deserve it. It's that simple. We deserve it. Deserves got nothing to do with it. In the words of Gene Hackman, that's Unforgiven, guys. It is time to jump into this show. It's the first Netflix instant pick of the new year, and it's the first time we played the intro, so here we go. Check it out.
For the entertainment that you see, time for the Netflix pick of the week. The Netflix instant pick of the week.
Here we go. Using the Crespo Diso randomizer 9000, we were finding out what is the latest Netflix pick of the week. Drew, I forgot to tell you, I need a new logo banner thing. Like banner based on what we got already, but it says like Chris Crespo's Netflix pick of the week or something like that.
Okay.
I'll explain why later.
You just let me know exactly what you wanted to say and I can do it for you.
I just did.
He said something like
Netflix. Chris Crespo's Netflix instant pick of the week.
All right.
Very cool. We got the thumbs up. Tom, please let everyone know what is this week's Netflix instant pick of the week.
The 5 Phenoms.
Oh, snap. Old school kung fu style, guys. If you're not into martial arts movies, I apologize. This one's not for you. The 5 Venoms. It's called The 5 Venoms on Netflix, but I think the official title is actually 5 Deadly Venoms. It's one of these things, you know, older movies, they have multiple titles because of distribution and stuff. But it's kind of a classic kung fu film. It's from the 70s, maybe mid-70s. And it's a movie in which there's like the Poison Clan. And there are 5 specific styles of fighters, a scorpion, snake, stuff like that. And but they, when they were training, they just knew each other by their animals, and they all had masks. And now it's like the clan has broken up. The movie starts with the clan broken up, and someone has to go and find, discover who all the clan members are. Some of them have gone rogue, and they're like using their powers for evil, and then other ones possibly might be using them for good, but they can't find out who those guys are because they're all hidden. It's very cool, you know, kind of a fun little movie, and also very influential. When you see a lot of other movies that have come out since then, they've taken a lot of things from the 5 Venoms. It's one of those type of movies. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of kung fu martial arts movies, though.
No headliner, though. No big Bruce Lee.
No, no, not one of those. Jackie Chan. Nope, not one of those. And we've had some of those on the show before, like a Chinese Connection, Drunken Master. You know, those guys that obviously had their share of popular ones. But this one, it's there's no real standout guy. Actually, the lead is this dude who's kind of plays like sort of a kid, like a younger fella. And he's so dorky and kind of adorable, you know, like this guy thinks he's going to rock with the Poison Clan, you know. But then he actually turns out to be pretty good. It's cool. It's a fun movie for sure. But it's also a kung fu movie, so you do have to kind of like pay attention to the names and stuff. Those movies are always like overplotted.
What era are we talking about? What year?
70s. Mid to late 70s?
78.
78. Mid to late. There you go. 78. Mid to late 78. Yeah, I love it. And I'm a big fan of movies from that time period. Like, there's that. Shaolin Master Killer is another one that's on there. The Bruce Lee movies are all mid to late 70s type things. I grew up watching the Bruce Lee stuff. That's what like got me. And the Wu-Tang Clan, because they kept referencing kung fu stuff. I said, what? Like, Tiger Clan.
Who are these Wu-Tang guys?
Who are these Wu-Tang guys? What are they talking about? That's it. There you go. 5 Venoms.
5 Venoms.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Great choice, man. Perfect choice to start 2016. That's beautiful. All right, we got a lot of movies to talk about, so we're going to do them kind of quick with the box office recap. Drew, where are we starting the top 5?
At number 23.
Okay, here we go. The number 23 movie is...
Youth. It made $350,000.
$350,000?
Mm-hmm.
How many screens?
144. It lost 5 screens.
So it's already being reduced. 144 yep. screens. One of them is here in town at the Enzian Theater.
For a grand total of $1.6
million. $1.6
million
total? All right, you know what? And it's an English language movie, but mm-hmm. I think it may be... mostly an Italian production, it's possible. An Italian director, that type of thing. It's definitely an international film, a foreign film, but it's all in English. Like 99% is in English. Mm-hmm. Michael Caine plays a conductor who has retired, and he's on vacation in this elaborate hotel, spa place that's for like very rich people. His buddy, a filmmaker, played by Harvey Keitel, is also at the hotel at the same time, but he's using this vacation to try to like crack a story. So he has like, a team of young writers. And he's doing his thing on the side. And the whole movie is just them hanging out at this hotel, kind of talking about their lives and where they are at that moment. Paul Dano plays a young actor who's there to research a role or something that never says what the role is, though, until the end. And the whole movie is more like, it's artier than I thought it was going to be, you know? A lot of symbolism and, you know, imagery going on. A couple of dream sequences that are very interesting looking. And the whole movie's more like a mood piece.
Okay.
Kind of like a meditation type of thing on life and regret and, you know...
Lots of shadows.
What shadows?
Lots of shadows. A lot of times they bring the shadows in hard for those artsy-fartsy pieces.
You know what? Yeah, for stuff shot at night, for dark hallways, absolutely. Yeah,
a lot of sunlight blowing through the blinds.
A lot of open fields with sunny days and stuff, and a little bit of magical realism thrown in there. The type of, oh, is this real? What's going on? You know, that type of thing. And it's I liked it. It's very it's emotional. It's effective. But then, like, if someone else saw and they were bored by it or they didn't get it, I wouldn't be surprised, because it's not like, it's not a very mainstream, accessible, commercial type movie. It's definitely like an artistic statement, boom, about life and death and regrets. Do you have them? How do you feel about them? How do you live with them? Stuff like that.
I drink, usually.
Drew drinks. Yeah, that's one way to handle it, for sure. look for the answers at the end up the bottom of the glass.
Yes.
I keep looking, hoping maybe this glass will be it.
You just gotta have the right glass, that's all.
That's why I keep changing glasses every time. So it's a movie I enjoyed quite a bit, but like Drew said, 140 theaters, so most people are gonna get a chance to see it like on DVD or something like that. And it's something the type of thing where you're gonna one have to be in the mood to watch it. You can't just put it on, be like, all right, let's see what this is, and then blast it in the face with art. A shotgun blast of regret to the dome. So I enjoyed it. There you go. Right. Youth. Michael Caine. Great as always. Harvey Keitel. Awesome. Jane Fonda in one scene.
Sweet.
Very good. She was very good.
Coming to number 7 this week.
Number 7. Top 5.
The Big Short.
Takes us number 7 to The Big Short.
How did we congress $9 million? Okay. Total 32.
We saw this. We saw this separately, but we both.
Yeah, I saw it over the Christmas break.
Do you even know what The Big Short is?
No. Nope.
This is one of these ones where I feel like it's being buried. You don't see any advertising for it.
Yeah. Well, for good reason. I mean,
because of the topic, the subject matter.
The topic, the subject matter, and the end of the movie where they're like, "Oh yeah, and by the way, we're still right back where this all started."
Yeah. So The Big Short, Tom, is the movie based on the book The Big Short. Inside the Doomsday Machine, which I would have called the movie Inside the Doomsday Machine.
That
would
have been awesome.
The same guy who wrote Moneyball and another book along those lines. And it's all about the credit and housing bubble and collapse and the financial recession of the depression of 2007
and
2010.
How, like, three groups of people decided to basically bet against the American economy, and boy did they win big.
Yeah, because they saw what the banks were doing.
So a documentary.
No, well, kind of.
You know,
kind of.
Those lines.
Like I said, those little things.
They're snippets. There are
the snippets.
There are at least three moments in the movie.
Did you enjoy the snippets, Chris? Yeah, the first snippet was really good.
The first one, I was like, oh, this is exactly what Drew was telling me about. What happens is, first off, it's like Christian Bale plays a person who's a real person. Ryan Gosling plays a person.
They all play real people.
Or like amalgamations of people, you know, because some of it's fudged a little bit.
And they actually bring that up in the movie at one point.
Yeah, they address it. How this is a movie, but a lot of this stuff actually happens. Still.
Well, The Wolf on Wall Street, that was a documentary, right?
That was based on a real person, too.
Basically.
But that was like, well, let's just concentrate on just the asshole that helped cause a lot of heartache. This is more like, let's concentrate on these people who saw the collapse coming years ahead of time and decided, well, you know, we all have different ways that we can profit on it. And as they're waiting for the profits to kick in, they're like, well, how come this shit isn't happening sooner? Yeah. Oh, massive fraud is going on. That's why the banks are total, they're crooks.
And it really drives it home, too.
It's crazy. It is, a movie is about three groups of people who do bet against the housing market and against the American economy, and knowing that they would only get rich when millions of other people will lose their jobs and lose their homes.
Yeah.
That's not how I like to win.
No, but
and that's addressed.
No,
some people are totally cool with it, and other people.
Some people
are,
have a little bit more. Well, because some people are doing it. Well, because some people are doing it for different reasons. Exactly. You know, one of them, like the Christian Bale character, he's not thinking about it from a moralistic point of view. He's strictly a numbers
victory.
Guy.
Yeah. Victory.
Yes,
that's all he wants.
Well,
not even.
He's just
running the numbers, and the numbers tell him to do this, so he does it.
The guy, Dr. Burry, has Asperger's syndrome, so that definitely plays into it.
Yeah.
He doesn't take any emotion into anything, or even the idea of being right or wrong.
Yeah,
he's like, well,
good or bad. Right.
Like, he's like, I run a hedge fund. This is what the numbers say is going to happen. This
so that's
our,
what I'm doing.
This is our best bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. But then there's another character
who
is like moral crusade.
He's basically the only reason why he wants the money is because he knows it's coming from the banks, and he's trying to kick the banks in the teeth.
Yeah, he's like, we want to kick the banks in the teeth, which then, you know, kind of sucks when the taxpayer bailout happens. And he's like, oh shit, now we're just taking taxes.
So it ultimately rolled into our lap. Yeah.
Well, no, exactly.
Which is why at the end, he's like, fuck.
And that is addressed too, because at the end of the movie, you know, everybody makes their money. Some people feel good about it. Some people feel bad about it. Some people don't feel at all about it. It just happened.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then, you know, the government did this and instituted this regulation and this, that, the other. That's all a lie. This is what actually happened. And it basically, for all intents and purposes, we are smack dab in the middle of it all over again.
Yeah, because now the banks are selling modified CDOs. And then for things like the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations, and all these things that the movie, it's a very interesting movie because
wow.
that even comes out and says, Listen, we're about to hit you with a bunch of jargon that the finance world uses to make things seem boring and overly complicated. This is so that you think you can't understand it and you tune out so that the finance world can continue to rip everyone off.
So
the same thing happens in the legal world, too.
Lawyers. Here's Margot Robbie in a bathtub drinking champagne to explain this
to
you.
So they found interesting ways to like explain complicated things.
Yeah.
So it's Margot Robbie in a bathtub drinking champagne talking about CDOs.
Anthony Bourdain talking about reusing old fish.
Unsold, yeah. Comparing the reselling of unsold fish as a repackaging of unsold debt. And Selena Gomez explaining synthetic CEOs via blackjack and people betting on people who are betting
who are betting on
the game. And the bets keep getting bigger and bigger.
It's oligarchy.
Yeah.
Absolute oligarchy.
It's amazing. And
I prefer anarchy to oligarchy.
But between the two, I would have to choose anarchy as well.
Usually,
at least you got a better
usually
shot.
After
you got
one
shot in anarchy.
Usually after one follows the other.
Well, you would
cheers, yeah. Indeed.
I mean, it's a cycle. That's just two sides of the same coin.
You would think so, but still, they have to happen first. Yeah. So it's very interesting, very well done.
I've got my pitchfork out back. I'm ready.
And that's what you've been sharpening.
Yeah, let's go to Oregon, huh?
Oh my God, take over some federal land. We're the right shade of skin color to not shot immediately.
And you can get away with it too. We'll just, you know,
I got to stay out of the sun.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting movie, and despite it being about the economic collapse and all this fraudulence and all this horrible shit that happened,
it's actually quite entertaining.
It's a very entertaining movie. It's directed by the guy who did the Will Ferrell movies like Step Brothers and Talladega Nights, and it's his first drama, but the guy has comedy in his DNA, so he can't make a movie that still doesn't have some levity to it.
Exactly.
And
which is good too, because if it didn't if it didn't have that levity, I would have walked out like, oh my God, I want to shoot every banker in the face.
It's the type of thing where you have to laugh to keep from crying.
Yeah.
You know? And it does it in a very entertaining, high energy way that kind of, it almost feels like an Ocean's 11 version of because these guys are doing a heist. They're trying to get all this shit has to fall into place and they have to figure things out. But then, like Drew said at the end, then it gets to the point where it's like, oh yeah, this is why the economy collapsed. Government did nothing to do about it, did nothing to stop it or keep it from happening again. And it's probably going to happen again. Oh, yeah. And invest in the water.
Yeah. Invest in water. Do it now.
I got two words to say. Bernie fucking said.
Yes.
Feel the burn.
Two beautiful words. That's what we've been saying around here. Yeah, he hates that shit. That's the stuff.
Well,
right,
he's working for people, not for money.
Not for the corporations. You know, not for the banks.
This country's for the people.
Yeah. But it used to be for the people.
Well, they need it back.
Got to get it back. Got
to
take
it's the only way, back. One way to take it back is get that rascal into office.
I'm telling you, man, it's sad when 25 years later, Rage Against the Machine's lyrics
still ring true.
Sound stronger than ever. So The Big Short, very entertaining, really well done, and also in a way, in its own way, an important movie for people to see to help understand what happened in this country.
It sounds a little Wolf on Wall Street-esque.
Yes.
It's got that ring.
And that it talks about all that stuff, and it's about greed and avarice.
And they bring the levity and comedy into it as well, like the Wolf.
The Wolf had to go dark comedy because that shit was insane. But then the one thing The Big Short does that the Wolf of Wall Street doesn't do, because Wolf of Wall Street is solely about the perpetrators.
One cat, yeah.
Yeah, and them living their lives. The Big Short wants to give you the whole picture, so it's showing you some people, like, here's a dude in a house who he's paying his rent, but his landlord's behind on the mortgage, and now cut to him later, he's living in a van with his family in a gas station. You see much more of the fallout, and they really bring home the pain and anguish of the real consequences of what happened when these people were just messing around with zeros.
So it wasn't sugar-coated like
Wolf. Exactly. Ooh. Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street's more like, we're going to look at this asshole and turn it into a dark comedy. Big Short's like, this is the world around you.
Without pulling the lens back a little bit and looking at the broad view of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Because that would have detracted from what they were trying to do with that movie. But they are kind of, definitely would make a great double feature. Wolf of Wall Street and then Big Short would be an interesting 5.5 hours?
And then 99 Houses.
Which would you watch first?
I would watch Wolf of Wall Street first, just because then The Big Short gets into more of the heavier stuff, the consequences.
And then you can see what...
And then watch 99 Houses.
See the actual personal consequences.
And then you see like a family go through what happens when their house gets taken away from them because of bad mortgages and stuff. Yeah, that's another good one too, 99 Houses. So recommended, Drew? Yeah?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's got all the, you know, lots of big names.
Yep.
I mean, it's got the Christian Bale, the Ryan Gosling, Mr. Pitt himself shows up with a beard and some glasses.
Yeah, playing a disgusted banker where these two young guys come up to him and are like, man, help us get a seat at the table. And he's like, it's an ugly table.
you don't want it. He's like, listen,
I'll help you, but it's bad.
I've done this and I don't like doing this.
I've done this and I left for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely good stuff there. Check it out.
Number six, Joy.
Number six, Joy. I saw Joy.
Made an additional $10.4 million, total of 38.
38, almost a $20 million opening weekend. Christmas weekend, the week after Star Wars, almost making $20 million. That's that Jennifer Lawrence power right there, I would say.
That J-Law.
That J-Law. Make an R-rated drama, which is about a lady who invented the Miracle Mop.
Yeah,
and it opened for almost $20 million. It's actually a very good movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's not as well reviewed as I thought it would be, but I still like it. She plays Joy Mangano, who is a real person who invented the Miracle Mop in like 89, 90. She got on QVC when QVC was first starting. She helped build that channel. She helped build the Home Show, Home Shopping Network and all that stuff. So she built her own empire, but the movie's about this lady who, before she did all that, she was trying to raise her kids. Her parents were divorced. She had four generations of people living in her house. Her job sucked. She was very unhappy. And then she came up with this idea, and she's trying to grow the idea, grow the business, be an entrepreneur, and all the struggles and all that, and all the obstacles, both personal and business, that pop up. It's good.
Happy ending?
Well, this lady is a multimillionaire. I mean,
it's an American movie, so yeah, probably.
Yeah. It is kind of an American dream type of movie, absolutely.
It sounds like it's ripe for an explosion at the end.
Yeah, you'd think so. There's one part in the trailer where she has a shotgun, and she's shooting a shotgun a bunch of times. But then you watch the movie, and it's like, oh, she's just letting out some stress.
Yeah.
She's not going to shoot anyone. But it's good. It's good. Jennifer Lawrence is great. There's another David O. Russell, you know, after Silver Linings Playbook and The Fighter and American Hustle. It's just another very good movie coming from this guy who's just been cranking them out lately.
With the same cast.
Well, yeah. Robert De Niro's in it. One of his better performances, for good. Sure. I watched another Robert De Niro movie on DVD because I was with my family for a week. So, you know, my mom got some movies on Redbox. And one of them was this movie called Heist. And I was like, Heist from the 90s with Gene Hackman and Danny DeVito? And apparently this movie just came out like a year ago with Robert De Niro, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's a comedian in Watchmen.
Okay.
Morris Chestnut, who's the black guy from Under Siege 2. And it's a casino boat heist movie, and De Niro plays like the owner of the casino boat called John Pope, but everyone calls him the Pope.
Oh, yeah,
and it's like, it's this really bad, like, it seems like it's trying to be like one of them 90s thrillers, you know, but it's 2015, kind of late on that.
Yeah.
And it's just not good. And De Niro is just like kind of sleepwalking through it, just reading the lines, doesn't seem very invested in it at all. And it was interesting seeing that right after Joy, in which he's like, he's into it. He's acting. He's doing some really good work there. That guy knows. He knows what he's doing. He knows when he's just collecting a paycheck. Even De Niro says,
"Hey man, he's got how many mortgages?"
Even De Niro's got to eat. Yeah, maybe he's got a bunch of mortgages.
Like I said,
maybe he got some double B junk bonds,
some ex wives to keep happy.
Yeah, probably that too.
Does he? Is he still with Angela Bassett? Angela Bassett? Did they split up?
Who knows?
We are totally not a gossip show.
Nope.
Showing, and maybe we should be.
Sorry, I don't
know. No. I'm thinking maybe we should be, and then we can get a deal with like People Magazine.
Or TMZ.
Yeah. Man, TMZ is so popular. I hate TMZ, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
They are doing it. They have a live show that they do that I did not know about. That people call in and stuff and ask.
Good
like,
for them.
What do you think about
care.
Usher doing?
I don't give a fuck.
Doing all this stuff.
That was crazy. Just like a number five movie.
Oh, shit. You mean we finally got to number five?
Alvin the Chipmunks, The Road Chip.
Okay.
Made an additional $11.8 million for a total of 67. I cannot believe that movie's made $67 million.
And that's low for them, too. So I don't think we'll ever get another Alvin and the Chipmunks movie.
Is it a cartoon?
It's one of these live action things.
Live action with CG characters.
Animated.
Is it rated G?
Maybe PG.
I would guess G. The first two did
PG. No, I was right. PG.
PG. Yeah. The first two did pretty decent money, but this one, there's too many movies out now. Kids would rather see Star Wars than see damn Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh yeah.
All right. So what's number four?
Number four, Sisters, made $12.58 million, total of 61.
Another one. This one, when I was talking earlier about movies that take place in Orlando, Sisters takes place in Orlando.
Not shot here.
But not shot here though. Probably shot in Georgia or something like that, which is a bummer. The funniest thing is, Identity Thief, the Melissa McCarthy movie from a year ago, it said that they were going to Winter Park, Florida, right? It's set in fucking Winter Park.
And then it shows a beach.
Yeah, and then they're like, then when the character goes to Florida, they show an aerial shot of a coastal beach line.
Yeah. Oh, there's they no beach trust in the lack of geography skills of
people. Yeah.
No one's gonna know. They're like, no one's gonna know where Winter Park is. Winter
unless
Park
you're is from so Winter Park.
Unless you're one of the,
or
the
have lived
40
in Winter
people.
Park.
Yeah. It, which is a small part of the population, yeah. Considering, right? So they're like, fuck it, we'll just show. What are we gonna show? Park Avenue? Boring.
Coming in number three this week. The Hateful Eight.
Week
engrosses $16.24 million, total of 29.5.
So theater counts, is that over 2,000 now?
2,474.
Okay, so here's the deal with The Hateful Eight. It played for a week from Christmas to this past Wednesday or Thursday, and only 100 screens across the country in the 70mm roadshow version, which is where they...
Which we saw.
They set up a projector in the theater, an actual film projector. They had to fly in. They trained all these young kids to be projectionists, and then flew them to all these different locations around the country to spend pretty much a week showing the film.
That used to be a legit profession.
Absolutely. And you know what? They even had to simplify it for these kids. Instead of them having to do reel changes, they actually spliced the whole movie together in one gigantic reel.
9 foot of fucking
round. 400 pounds.
A 400 pound box, and then they set up on the projector, hit play, and they step back, and then let the machine do the rest of the work. That's a 2015 projectionist right there, Tom. And even then, they had to train people to be able to do that because they had to line it up properly, mat the film and all that shit. And there are reports of a lot of screens around the country where theaters still even got that stuff wrong. But where we saw it, it was pretty good. There may have been a slight issue because the flicker, the shutter was a little stronger.
Yeah, I could, you know? I noticed that
you noticed
it was film.
You noticed the flicker. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least you know it was on film.
Yeah, but there's some other things you notice that it's film about. The depth. It's not so two-dimensional like video
it's
is.
Gorgeous.
You can really see the depth of the...
It was. It was really pretty.
And black looks black.
Yep. It's warm.
And red looks red.
Yeah. All the
color. The giant pillows of blood.
It's warmer and more detailed and just gorgeous looking.
Oh, so much harder to light. It's probably... You take about 5 times harder to light film than it is video.
And they're doing... extra wide aspect ratio, so that you got bigger images. You have to light, make sure everything is lit, because now you're getting things all the way in the back in the corner that otherwise you wouldn't pick up. When they were filming the movie, I read on the set, the actors, when they would make decisions, like, my character's gonna be over by the fireplace or moving over here, over there. Even if the camera's all the way over there, they still had to
light them properly.
Light them properly. They just had to be in character, because even though they're way in the background, they're still getting picked up.
Yeah, they're still in the piece.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
with video, they're just lost in the background.
Yeah, there's a bunch of pixels back there that you gotta sharpen with your Pro Tools and stuff. So technically speaking, the movie is a gorgeous movie. It's also playing now. With the release now, it's in the 2,000 screens. Mm-hmm. It's normal digital projection. It doesn't have an overture or an intermission. The roadshow version had both of those.
Yes,
it was cool.
Old school.
And it's also going to be 6 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
Is it violent?
Oh my goodness.
Well, the second half is very violent.
It takes a while for the blood to spill.
Yeah.
But when
it does... Well, there's little blood. I mean, Dahmer Goog, she gets elbowed in the face.
She gets brutally beaten from start to finish.
Yeah.
We need to do a spoiler bonus episode so we can talk in detail about the stuff that happens in the movie. But yes, halfway through the movie, it's split up into 6 chapters. Yeah. Chapters 4, 5, and 6 are bloody as hell.
1, 2, and 3 is all set up, and 4, 5, and 6, they just knock it all down.
Yeah, it's all payoff. It's oh my God, so over the top. Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Really, yeah.
But it's also a Tarantino style where it's...
It's extra brutal.
To the point of cartoonishness.
Yeah. I mean, that blood is
which
so
makes it a little more tolerable for the squeamish,
viscous.
You know?
I think so.
Yeah.
I get squeamish in movies very easily. A horror film,
yeah.
Something like a hostel or something where it's someone, puts a drill into your leg or they just cut your face or something, or cut your ear. Something like that's very real and tangible. I'm like, I can't
even
get nauseous.
Someone's head exploding in a pillow of blood.
Yeah, someone gets shot and it's like... just the most insane over-the-top stuff. Think about in Kill Bill when she's fighting all the gang members and she's cutting people and it's sprays along the wall like a fountain. She cuts off the lady's arm and she's like... it's flying out like a fire hydrant. And then she's rolling around the ground like she's still alive after losing...
That much blood.
After losing all of her blood and then 3 other people's worth of blood. Yeah. You know, and she's still alive.
that is easy to take because it's like I might as well be watching an anime right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cartoonish.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Django.
And your brain knows it's not. You're not actually watching this happen to somebody.
Exactly. So. They're not going for realism. They're going for a shock value. And Django Unchained. That one skirted that line because the violence that happens against black people in the movie is very raw and violent and harsh. But then the violence that happens against white people is so over the top and insane that it's like, man, this is... Because it's like they didn't want to... I feel like he didn't want to trivialize the violence inflicted on the slaves. Yeah. So he showed that for what it was.
The gunshots were really weird on to Django. They had these little toy guns. And they just...
Yeah, exactly. The same thing happens in Hateful Eight. And they even did a similar trick where... because this happened in Django, I love it. A slow motion shot of like... Jamie Foxx pulls out his gun and he takes a shot and it's a slow motion pan
until
and it follows the bullet that hits the guy and then it explodes out of his back. They did a similar thing in Hateful Eight with one shot where it panned back and forth between two characters as they shot each other. And it's like you're following the gunshots, which is impossible, obviously, but it's a very interesting artistic flourish.
But, it was hilarious. You were getting shot by what looked like at most like a 38 caliber pistol. And at one point in time, Tim Roth gets hit in the belly and just flies back up against, hits the wall, comes down. It's like, was that a shotgun?
Yeah. It's like he got hit with cannons. it's over the top crazy. I like the movie quite a bit. I love Tarantino movies, and I love Westerns. So the two things combined together, it's like, it's right up my alley, you know, that type of thing. It is, I do feel like, and I've written my review, covers this online, but I feel like he's no longer necessarily trying to make a movie that's just out to entertain us. He's not trying to entertain us anymore. Now he's pushing buttons and trying to make us think about stuff. I think he's not getting enough credit, as a matter of fact, for bringing up certain things in movies and dealing with racist issues and even misogyny and stuff, but we'll talk more about that in the bonus episode. But overall, I liked the movie quite a bit. I really enjoyed it. Drew, what did you think?
I mean, you have to be into Westerns and Tarantino, and you have to be able to wait for a payoff. This isn't, you know, Reservoir Dogs or anything where it's very upfront and like, oh, here's some violence, ha ha ha, funny, violence, ha ha ha, funny. Yeah. This is talk. This is why people hate each other. Talk, death.
Sure, it takes a while. It takes its time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I like it.
That substantiates it.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, because there's stuff going on. The characters are being developed. And it's a Hateful Eight for a reason.
Oh God, there's so much hate.
They're all pretty despicable characters. Even the ones that you think are the nicer guys,
they're end still up being complete assholes and pieces of shit,
horrible people. I think that's part of the mixed response to the movie. There's no one to really cheer for, and you think you're cheering for someone, and they're like, "Oh, wait a second, no, I don't want to back this." I'm backing this pony now.
What are you doing?
Like, I guess by default. So that was number three.
Yeah.
A pretty good opening for a Tarantino. What was the total again? 20? 20 something?
Total of 29.5.
29.5. It could get to 100 million, I think, which I think would be his third movie in a row.
With the gorilla in the room, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, exactly. With the one sucking up all the money. Like a giant...
vacuum cleaner.
From Spaceballs.
Yeah. Coming to number two this week, Daddy's Home. We can gross $29 million.
Exactly, and we're talking about that movie, Daddy's Home.
Total of $93 million.
I saw Daddy's Home on the vacation with the mom and the brother, and we all agreed that it was just like,
meh.
You know, it had a couple of laughs. I like Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg together in comedies. I think they're good, but the movie itself was like, nah, brah. I'm not seeing Daddy's Home 2, that's for sure.
And winning all of the monies, Star Wars : The Force Awakens. We can gross up another $88 million total.
Unbelievable.
Total of $740 million in the United States for a total of $1.5 billion worldwide after 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Its third weekend made $88 million. That's insane. It's broken,
it's winning all the monies.
It's broken practically every award there is. Record. Every record there is a break, it's breaking them. The only one that it didn't break that everyone thought it would. Fastest to $1 billion worldwide. For some reason, despite having a bigger opening weekend than Jurassic World, Jurassic World got to $1 billion faster.
No.
Could have been any number of reasons for that. It's a stupid metric anyway. Mm-hmm. That ultimately doesn't mean a damn thing.
No.
$1.5 billion
worldwide
after 3 weeks.
The number two movie of all time is Titanic, I think, at 1.8. So it's going to beat that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. For sure. Guaranteed. Probably next week.
Avatar is at 2.8 for worldwide.
Ooh, so that's well, where it's going. I mean, this is for. This is Star Wars, and like you've discussed previously, it you know it coming out in December means it's going to have a longer run in theaters.
It's going to have them legs.
I mean, this movie's still going to be in theaters come middle of fucking February.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to have to surpass Avatar.
I would think so. I would think so. It's going to have similar box office weekend as Avatar, but with an opening weekend that's like four times it.
Yeah.
That opening weekend was so absurd.
Ridiculous.
Like, it destroyed
everything.
History. You know?
The hype around this thing was unbelievable. And,
yeah.
And well, I've watched Star Wars before as a casual
but
watcher.
But
how many times can you just kill Spock?
Right. I mean, still.
You can kill him.
It
once. I think he only killed Spock once.
I think the reason,
and then they switch it.
I think the reason for there, the reason for it was because there was, it had to be better than the previous three, and that's all it needed to be.
Yeah.
As long as it was better than the previous three, then it could go on, you know, be part of Star Wars canon and all that fun stuff,
which is what it did.
So, exactly.
Have you even seen the newer ones, or did you only see the original ones back in the day? And
you
then
know,
never
I
got
don't.
Back to it?
I must say that I've just been a casual watcher, and I don't even recall which ones I've seen. I'm certain I saw the OG, and then I think I picked up one of the newer ones.
Yeah, there's no point in watching the newer ones.
But it was never like this rabid fan or anything. It was just,
and you know what? Even as a fan of Star Wars, the hype that you're talking about
ridiculous
was annoying me. It was like everywhere I looked was Star Wars. I can't imagine people who are just like, I don't care.
Yeah, if you're casual to it, it's like, whoa, huh?
Yeah, that's everywhere. Like, why are you? I guess it's sort of the way I feel when I see people flip out for like Harry Potter stuff, or even the Hunger Games, which is all stuff that, you know, like you more. I'm like, I'm casually into it. I'm not like super into it. I'm not a big fan. But then when I see other people flipping out for it, I'm like, man, I wish I could enjoy. Participate in your enthusiasm.
Yeah. Now you,
I don't got it.
Yeah. I always wonder, like, what starts that fire? Is it just an incredible media campaign that Star Wars was able to do?
Well, I
think it's a big combination.
Probably took the two. You had to have the dry kindling over here ready to catch on fire.
Yep, yep.
But them bitches started throwing fire at that kindling and lit
but
it up.
People were ready for a new Star Wars with new blood behind
it. But it's still classic storytelling. I mean, these are stories that humans have been telling for eons.
Sure. I mean, it's even episode 4 wrapped up in new wrapping paper.
Exactly. Well,
with some new bows on it.
Well, it's episode 4 and episode 5 combined.
With a little bit of episode 6 thrown in there.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
It's retro filmmaking.
It really is. That's what it felt like.
And that on top of the Disney marketing machine, which none of the other Star Wars movies have had. All the other Star Wars were released through Fox. Well, it's Lucasfilm and Fox. This is all Disney. The Disney marketing machine is better than
they're incredible else. And what they're incredible at is not actually like buying 60-second spots on the TV. They're incredible in marketing behind the scenes where you don't even fucking know you're marketed.
Yes, and like when you go to a gas station and you see a stand up for like potato chips, and the stand up is in the form of Darth Vader, and he's holding a thing, and it's a Star Wars, like, oh, maybe I should go see Star Wars as I eat my food. It's everywhere. Geniuses, they're so good at that.
Money. They remind me of Wall Street, that Disney.
Oh, yeah.
They are. And, this is the thing that I say.
It's a multi-billion-dollar corporation, so.
And this is the thing that I've always been saying, too. Star Wars is cool. We all like Star Wars. You know, we're fans of blah, blah, blah. The people who make the movie, the writers and the directors, the actors, they want to make a good movie. They're trying to entertain us. They want to make a cool piece of pop art.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When it gets up to the next level, Disney.
Cash.
The corporation is all about the cash. They're making Star Wars movies not to entertain us and not to make us feel good about the Skywalker family, but to make money, 100%.
No, exactly.
It's a means to the end.
They are spending, so if you take the budget.
And so they can sell merchandise?
So if you take the budget of $200 million and you double it with,
with the marketing. Sure.
So yes.
They've already over $1 billion.
They spend $400 million to make, you know, $3 or $4 billion.
At this point, on top of the merchandising.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, people who are like, there are people out there who are actively like rooting on Star Wars because it's one of their favorite movies now. Like, oh, I want this movie to break records and make all this money, blah, blah. I'm just saying, remember that you are rooting on the Empire in this situation.
Yes.
You are enabling the Empire.
It's kind of like when your favorite brewery gets bought out by Budweiser.
Yes. Exactly.
So
like,
you
bye
know,
bye Goose Island.
Yeah, you still love, you still love the brewery, but you know where it's the, not, yes, the profits are going. Yeah, it's like, and, ow, and it just kind of stings a little.
And then it's all being spit back around into making more the Super Bowl.
Now, I'm not sure this happens with pictures, but when the big boys get a hold of breweries, mm-hmm, the quality certainly subsides. And
that's what happens. The parallel to that would be when indie filmmakers... who do have a specific voice and vision in their films.
Get into the bigger
get
stuff.
Get into the studio, and they make a studio-run movie, and then they have to answer to all these chiefs. And
when you've got accountants making the calls, yeah, that's when it gets really tough.
Yeah, or when the marketing department shows up, it's like, this has to happen so we can put it in our trailers.
And actually, I saw that when I was working in movies. I saw the accountants slowly really grabbing a hold of the purse strings.
Yeah.
We grips and, you know, techs, we really made a good buck. I mean, like doctor quality wages.
Yeah, the union work.
And then all of a sudden, these accountants got a hold. And this is over about the 15 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. It was just starting to happen as I got in. Mm-hmm. But I watched it really occur over my career there. And it just is so weird how the accountants get in, start scouring the money and going, why the fuck are we paying all these guys all this money?
Yep.
Well, because they're middle class and they go, you know, support the economy and they're living a good life. Well, I mean, why not?
And they're making sure that we can continue making all this art, right, so they, people can continue.
They're really good at what they do. You know, it's a reward. That's right, how it works.
Exactly.
But no, they started peeling that shit out, and there's so many people that are so desperate to work in film and television,
yeah,
that they'll work for a fucking t-shirt.
That's
and
true.
It just really undermines, that's, you know, the professionalism of what the craft is.
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely, when money becomes the end all be all, then the art is going to be compromised 100%.
And I can carry that parallel straight to brewing, sir. Every craft brewer should start wanting to make incredible beer.
Yes.
And realize that he can maybe make some good money doing it.
Yes, exactly.
That's the path forward there.
I see
not reverse.
I see the same way with filmmakers. People that want to tell stories, they should just try to tell the best story that they can, the truest story that they can. Not worry about finding an audience or making money. Hopefully that will come when you make and tell a good movie.
Yeah, if you've done a good job,
people will find it. But if you're just focused on, oh, this has to get in front of as many eyeballs as possible, well then...
And I can recognize that in a brewery too, and they're just dollar driven. You can see what they're doing, and you can, you know, I could name a few, but there are some breweries that just...
And if you like...
They don't want to make great beer.
Feel free to name a couple if you want to.
They want to make great money.
Absolutely. That's capitalism. That's capitalism right there.
Well, capitalism and artisanship do not mix.
No, they don't, unfortunately. But that's the world we live in right now. So Star Wars is making that money. We'll talk about more Star Wars in the second half here. Let's see. New movie is coming on DVD. Eli Roth's The Green Inferno, his cannibal film. Speaking of movies where it's like getting squeamish, I ain't watching no movies about cannibals cutting people's tongues out and like braising them in a Merlot sauce of some sort. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, another horror film that didn't see. Got very poor reviews.
No.
The Visit, another horror film. M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit. Which is okay, actually. Not a bad Shyamalan movie. And The Walk, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He plays Philip Petit doing the tight walk across the World Trade Center.
Just watch Man on Wire instead.
You know, the Walk does have some things to offer that Man on Wire doesn't. I actually think it would make for a good double feature. Watch Man on Wire first, and then watch The Walk.
Damn, there's a lot of good movies out in that shadow of that frickin' gorilla right now, aren't there?
Yeah, which is why, you know, Hateful Eight wasn't supposed to come out this time of year. It was supposed to come out a couple months ago, but because
production delays
because of lack of
production delays.
No, production lack of snow. They picked a part of Wyoming to film in January where there was historically always snow, and they got there, no snow.
El fucking Nino.
El Nino. So they had to wait for the snow to come. So yeah, that happens sometimes. That happens. What's coming out in theaters, Drew?
The Forest.
The Forest, movie about the suicide forest.
Yeah.
Someplace.
In Japan,
where people apparently go to die.
Well, yeah, I mean, just historically, they just kind of walk in there and then...
And then just die?
Yeah.
And then just
they
die.
Just kind of...
Maybe get lost.
Well, I mean, a lot of the people, like, they hang themselves, or they do this, the other.
Sure,
a lot of the times you just, you know, find their clothes or... You know, because there are now government officials that walk through the forest and, you know... cut the people down.
Oh, looking for people.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a horror film about a girl whose twin sister finds out went into this forest, and she's going into the forest looking for her, and then it's supernatural stuff starts happening. So it's a real location, but then they turned a ghost story out of it. But it's a real place, though.
Yeah.
According to the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
according to the marketing.
Also coming out, which I'm very much looking forward to,
yes.
The Revenant.
The Revenant comes out.
Wide release.
It came out around Christmas, so it comes out wide release January 8th. This is the one, Tom, where to shoot this movie, they went into like untouched wilderness in Canada in the winter. And it, you know, like a 2-hour schlep to get the equipment to the shooting location. And then they have to finish shooting before 3 p.m. when the sun goes down because it's all natural lighting and stuff.
Who's the lead character in that?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's right. I heard about this picture. I heard that they were losing crew members like crazy. They were so brutal on them.
Yeah, it's a pretty hellish shoot. And again, a lot like Hateful Eight, they had a whole schedule set out, and then part of it got effed up because the weather. There wasn't enough snow, and they had to find other locations. They had to just shut down production. It caused some of the other actors, like DiCaprio and Tom Hardy, to have to drop out of other projects because they couldn't like cut their hair or shave their beards or anything. They had to keep the same look that they had and wait for the next winter to come back around. It was a crazy, crazy shoot. But the people that stuck around all believed in it, and apparently the movie is like it's like poetry.
Yeah. See, and that's when your crew are artisans as well.
Absolutely.
And they're not just there for the check. They're there for what they're doing.
They want to say, I worked on this amazing...
I survived it.
They should have given out shirts, I survived the Revenant shoot 2015-2016.
Now, the most brutal picture I ever worked on was Dead Presidents. What they did was in Chuliota. It was in August, man. It was so hot.
So the opposite.
And it was so hot and brutal. And we were trying to make it look like Vietnam. It was, you know, Vietnam War scenes that we were replicating in Chuliota, Florida, and the swamps. And man, the Dragon cable and everything was hard. Everything you did was hard to do.
That is brutal.
And it just was nothing, and nothing was painless. Everything was painful.
Right. But hey, you know what? At least it was for Dead Presidents. It's a pretty good movie. It's a wild movie. Hype Williams. It could have been for some like Ernest Saves Christmas Again. You know, like, damn it. Not even the first one. It was a sequel.
Ernest was non-union. He didn't pay very well. Oh, I never worked for him.
Oh, damn it, Ernest. Don't like to hear stuff like that about my childhood heroes.
Also.
Yeah.
Anomalisa comes out.
Anomalisa?
Yes, Anomalisa.
Yeah. So it's coming out. I think that's a limited release. No, but it's already out.
It's already out limited.
The Enzian won't have it for another couple of weeks, so I don't know if it's going to be playing at like
Winter Park
ahead of time.
Once in a while they do that.
I hope it is coming out because I want to do some show talk real quick. Mm-hmm. I want to do our best of episode, a year review, the week after The Revenant comes out. Mm-hmm. I want it to come out that Wednesday, and I need to see Anomalisa to put into consideration.
Well, yeah, I mean,
so if it's not playing in theaters next weekend, we're going to have to on-demand that shit.
I mean, the Metascore is fucking 95 out of 100.
Yeah, dude. Anomalisa is this movie, Tom.
It's the most human film of the year that doesn't have any people in it.
The whole thing is done stop-motion animation with, like, puppets and stuff. But it's written by the guy who wrote Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And he wrote and directed Snake in New York. And he wrote Adaptation. Does very meta, weird movies. And this is one of the most talked-about movies of the year. And I'm dying to see it.
Wow.
Looks crazy.
Anomalisa. All right, so there you go. Some good movies come out this weekend, guys. Enjoy it, because pretty soon it's all going to turn to crap with January, February.
Oh, yeah.
All right, before we take our break, it is time for the best part of the show, my favorite part of the show, Dr. Drew's Two Cents. And here's that Dr. Drew intro.
You must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
They call me Dr. Manhattan.
And Bridget Fonda.
Do doctors know more about sex?
Doc Hollywood.
Dr. Drew, take it away.
So, you know how a lot of people do, you know, like New Year's resolutions.
New Year's resolutions.
New year, new me.
New Drew.
Yeah, fuck that shit. New year, old asshole Drew, still here. What's up? Doctor's out.
Doctor is out. New year, old Drew. I like it. Good job, Drew. Let's take a break, guys. Crespo Disco time. I got a couple songs here. The first one is the Overture song by Ennio Morricone. His first...
It was good.
His first original music for a Western in like 40 years.
Scream was so red.
Scream was so red and so big. And the music's so intense. Here's the overture. It's a couple minutes long. And then Youth had a really good soundtrack, both original music and interesting music. They use it opens with an Italian disco type song, the style that I've been liking lately, by a group called, I wrote it down here, The Retro Sets. The song is called You Got the Love. So starting with the overture, then You Got the Love, a little bit of disco, and then we'll come back with the second half with Drew Zakogward and Tom. You guys ready?
Yep.
All right.
Got the love.
First Crespo Dome of 2016 is underway. I am still Chris Crespo, hanging out with New Year old Drew Drusick Ogburn.
What up?
And Tom the Beer Guy, Tom!
I get so thirsty.
Oh man. Cheers to you. We all get thirsty.
OB Pizzle.
It happens.
Orange Blossom Pilsner, the flagship beer of Orange Blossom Brewing. Thank you so much, sir, for bringing some over. I love it. I can... Immensely quaffable is how I would describe this beer. I could drink it all day. Quaffable. So quaffable. The Vice Baby, which I had earlier. So good. Tom. We're talking about your beers.
Vice beer is good.
Update us. What's going on with OBB?
Let's see. We have trend... I named my company OBP, and it was after my first beer, my beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started making other beers, it really was kind of awkward to have...
A pilsner in the name.
My brewery named after my flagship beer.
Sure.
So we gracefully evolved into Orange Blossom Brewing Company.
Absolutely, yes.
Which I really struggled with that, but I was sitting down with the owner of Cigar City talking about it, and Joey's dear old friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, Joey, I want to call my company. I want to evolve into Orange Blossom Brewing. People already say they don't taste orange in the Orange Blossom Pilsner when Orange Blossom Pilsner is Orange Blossom Honey.
Sure.
And I said, I'm just afraid people are going to think that all my beers have oranges in them.
Right.
And
a citrus-flavored line
of
beers. Yeah.
That's what, I was afraid to fight that. And mm-hmm. Joey goes, Tom, I don't put cigars in any of my beers.
That's true.
No, it sold, and he helped me make that change.
Good for
him. We've got four beers in our full-time lineup, and the fourth one is the Back in the Day IPA.
Yes.
And
I love IPAs, and it's such a good one.
That's an IPA that was a homebrew recipe from mine back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Which is why it's back in the day.
Exactly, and it was an old-school recipe. IPA has evolved so much in the last decade or two.
Right.
That just to take it back to the old school hops, those citrusy 4C hops.
And also more a little more balanced than IPAs are nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, I do not like hop heavy beers.
Nowadays it's like it's like Pine Sol beers.
But your Back in the Day IPA is awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
he will drink the hell out of those.
Now, what we Americans do, IPA was originally an English style of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an extinct style, as a matter of fact,
right.
Because it came up when they had to send IPA to the troops in India. Mm-hmm. No, they were sending beer to the troops in India, because in England, you don't just not give people beer. That's inhumane.
That's true.
So they were sending beer to the troops in India, and it wouldn't, by the time it got there, it wasn't in good shape.
It'd be skunked.
So at that point, this is the mid-1800s, I believe. Mm-hmm. In the mid-1800s, they one enterprising brewer used the two preservatives that they knew in the day, and they knew that hops preserved the beer.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that alcohol had a preservative effect. So what he did was he raised traditional English beers are in the 3.5 to 4% range.
Session beers.
Yeah. And that, everybody thinks European beers are strong. They're not strong in alcohol. They're strong in flavor.
Right.
So,
but they're meant to be drunk all day long.
A lot of people confuse that strong in flavor with strong in alcohol.
Yeah.
Like Guinness is a low alcohol beer.
People do the same thing with coffee. They think just because it has strong flavor means it's going to have a lot of caffeine.
Not the case.
It's actually the opposite of that.
So and Henry, he made a hoppier, stronger beer and sent it to the troops, and it fared the voyage well, and it was good when they got there. And, so and then hence we got India Pale Ale.
But then wouldn't they also... the original intent was to take that beer, that mix, and then kind of water it down to make it more like the beer that they knew?
They just made it a little stronger.
Okay.
You know, they were used to drinking 4% beer with, say, 25 bittering units. Mm-hmm. And I think Henry took it up to like 4.75%, maybe 5%,
uh-huh.
which is not a very strong beer at all.
It's like, typical beers.
Like American normal beers.
Yeah.
And he also took the bittering units up to about 25 BUs.
Okay.
Now, if you look at what we Americans have done with IPA, so it was an extinct beer style. Mm-hmm. The craft beer segment came along and started piling through the history books and found this beer that sure. was virtually extinct mm-hmm. at the time. And they said, we all said, hoppier? Stronger? Oh, hell yeah. And so that's why, you know, any brewery worth its salt makes an IPA.
Which why not? You have your hops executioners and
an IPA like that. Yeah, is sure. really driving the market right now. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think, but what we Americans have done, I'm losing my track here. What we Americans done is instead of doing it at 5% and 20 and, you know, and 30 or 35 BUs, uh-huh. we Americans took it to 6%. The bottom level for an American IPA is 6%.
Wow.
And 60 BUs.
Normally, if I see an IPA, I do expect them to see it around the 7%. Right. Maybe even a little higher.
So 6% is the bottom line on and 60 bittering units is the bottom line. That's just to enter the IPA. So a lot of them are, like you said, High Lie, a great, well-known IPA from Cigar City, is 75 BUs, I believe. And 7.5% alcohol. Look at what we Americans did to the old English version. We just caricatured it up.
We beefed it up and made it bigger and bolder.
Bigger, badder, better. You know, America.
America. So then there's beers out there that would classify for an old style English IPA, but as an American IPA, it wouldn't qualify.
It would fail. But, you know, your average IPA drinker would turn his nose up at it.
But back in the day, it would be towards the lower end in terms of the BUs and the percentage.
Exactly. I put it at 6.4% alcohol, so it's just above the threshold to be an IPA. It
just makes
sense. I put it at 60 BUs, right at the bottom line to be a threshold for an IPA.
And I tell you, it's so good.
And the malt
bill. I didn't say that because you're here either, Tom. That shit is so good.
And the malt bill, you know, the malt bill is really important because it gives some substance to back up that hop character.
Yeah, that sweetness.
You know, a lot of these new IPAs are just hop bombs with, like, that's all you can taste. There's nothing else in the beer except this mountain of hops.
Which I will taste it, I'll try it, and maybe even enjoy it, but I won't go out too often and like, this is what I'm going to pound all night. It's got to have some balance to it. Although that highlight is pretty...
Now, I find the new beer enthusiasts, what they'll often do is they've been cheated of flavor for so long with the watery American beers.
Sure.
That they just run to the most flavorful, you know. How far can I take this? So the hoppier the better is what a lot of fledgling beer enthusiasts will go for.
Sure.
And they've got Imperial IPAs and double IPAs and just taking it as far as it can go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watch some of these cats that just want the hoppiest beer ever. And it reminds me, the parallel I find is the same guy that wants the hottest chicken wings you can get.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, it's that bravado, that testosterone-laden bravado. How hot? Oh, these wings aren't hot as sweat is pouring off their forehead.
Right.
You know,
I can handle this. You got anything hotter than this? You got it? Do you have any of them 12% IPAs over there?
So the parallel there between the hop driven and the heat driven is strong.
That makes sense. I also got to say I'm a big fan of the OBP squared, which is just condensed. Boom.
We did a nice a fun bomb. Little test batch of oaked squared. We make 100 barrel batches of beer, which is 3,100 gallons of beer.
Okay.
That's a lot of beer.
That is a lot of beer.
But we have a little 8 barrel tank that we can pull off eight of that 100 barrels.
Okay.
And I pulled off 8 barrels, and there's 31 gallons to a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts it 280, 290 gallons. But 16 half barrel kegs.
Okay.
But we oaked 8 barrels of squared and put it in slim kegs, and it's going to start popping up around town here.
Really? So you have them like in oak
containers and oak casks?
Actually, there's a new way of oaking. Okay. The old way was you'd put it in an old whiskey barrel or an oak container somehow, and it'd take forever. And there's a lot of oxidation concerns with that. You're absolutely going to pick up some oxygen. Sure, you're absolutely going to pick up some negative qualities from that, from what you're doing. Well, they've got these new spirals that they make, oak spirals that you can get. And what you do is you just drop them into the stainless steel tank.
Yeah.
And the surface, it's a spiral because there's more surface area, more contact area for the beer to touch.
Okay.
And assume, you know, and take on that flavor.
Oh, wow.
And
so more beer is touching the oak.
Right, and,
quicker than if it's all just one.
So around the edge normally it would take 9 months or more to oak a beer in a cask.
Yeah,
but in 2 weeks you can get the same oak character in a stainless steel vessel without the oxidation concerns, without a lot of the concerns, and it just really makes for a cleaner, crisper oak aged beer.
Man, I want to try some of that Oak BP squared, man. That sounds good.
And if you think about OBP squared, it's already a little sweet. It's already got a lot going on. Yeah. And you just add that dry, oaky character. You know? And if you think of the oak character in some red wines, you know, and think if you took that oak character away from that red wine, how two-dimensional it'd be.
You just have alcohol juice.
Right. So the oak really, really contributes a lot to the flavor profile. Oh, I'm really proud of this beer.
That is awesome.
And who knows? We're testing the waters. There's a chance that, you know, if people really, really like it and we see some great feedback, we may do a run of, we'd have to do it in probably Bombers, 22-ounce bottles.
Okay.
And because when I buy cans, I've got to buy enough cans to make like 4,000 or 8,000 barrels of beer. It's incredible. You got to buy so many cans
that makes sense,
are pre-printed.
It's like you're going for a full production. So, it's being put out there in the market. You're doing for something smaller.
For just little one-offs, a little 22-ounce bombers are easy. The bottles are there. You just make a label, slap it on it, and you're
make
good.
Sure you let us know when this beer is available, sir. I want to get in on that. That limited run. That sounds great.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it came in a little early.
Here's the Cogburn versus the world. Juice to Cogburn versus the world.
But before we get to Juice to Cogburn versus the world, I want to finish up this beer talk real quick. So that's the one. Is that the one thing you're working on now that might be hitting market in 2016?
Yeah, it's just a very small little batch. It's going to be put out into some specialty bars, and we'll monitor the feedback on it and see how it goes.
And how's the the expansion going? Are you getting some more markets? Are any new markets lately with the beer?
We're being really careful at how we go. One of the things that we're starting to see proven is that breweries really need to focus on their home market, and a lot of back in the day, when it was hard to sell craft beer, like I remember Dogfish Head would just go into a new state like nothing and wouldn't think anything about it because they were just trying to keep their tanks full.
Sure.
But now that craft is on fire, we've got to be a lot more deliberate about our growth.
Yeah.
And it's been proven that work your home market is the way to go.
Okay.
So 90% of our effort and sales go into Florida.
Okay.
And we're putting a lot of effort into South Florida right now. That's been kind of a tough nut to crack.
There's a lot of brewers down there already.
No,
right?
It's more the business down there. South Florida is different, dude. It's kind of like doing business in Boston or Chicago. You really? There's all kind of graft and corruption.
Oh.
And it just is stupid down there.
Some big companies already got in there and they already made a bunch of shit. They got their backdoor deals.
Playing the game. Yeah. It's playing the game. And, I get these retailers asking for free kegs and free this and free that. And I go, look, dude, I just got good beer.
Either you want to sell my beer or you don't.
My accountant told me giving away my beer is not a good way to go.
But because the bigger brewers can afford to be like, hey, we can give you majorly discounted beers as long as all your taps are our taps or whatever.
Well, the way I see the big brewers doing those deep discounts and the 2-for-1s and a free kegerator and all that stupid shit, to me, that is like you got laid, but you paid for it. It's like buying a prostitute.
Sure.
It was not your charm that got you that position on the tap handle.
It was your
wallet that got you your position there. So
meanwhile, OBP is that hot chick at the bar that's like, someone's going to pick this thing up. Someone's got to. Based on its own merits, its own hotness. OBP is that hot chick. Budweiser is that.
It's like
crusty old whore.
It's like an old, an ugly girl will lift her skirt really quick.
Yeah, they will.
But you got to work a little harder to get that pretty girl skirt off, So that's the parallel there.
Even among the hookers, that's true. What? Who said that?
Speaking from experience, my friend.
I've been to Amsterdam. I walked the red light corridors. The women in there act very interestingly.
The Cradle of Filth.
Oh boy. That one alleyway.
The Cradle of Filth.
Is it called the...
Yes, it's called the Cradle of Filth. For damn good reason, Chris.
I turned down that alley that had blue lights. Boy, that freaks me out.
The blue light alley.
Yeah.
Was that blue light special? That can't be good.
That sounds scary.
That can't be good.
No, I asked somebody, I go, what's the blue lights? And they go, oh, that's transsexuals. And I
went, oh.
What?
Oh.
Is that a new thing? I never saw blue lights.
I didn't see the blue lights.
Oh, man.
You didn't notice.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah,
I was just looking for
I
the reds.
I hope you noticed before you walked in.
I was just looking for the reds.
I was fairly intoxicated as well.
That too. It was Amsterdam. Oh boy. Good times. We should do an episode of Tidbits with Etchy. Tell them about our Amsterdam trip.
Oh dear God.
It has to be heavily censored. So, people, please, it's the official beer of Cinema Crespi. So
yes.
I'm proud to say it too, because I love this beer. You're a great guy, and I want nothing but huge success for you and your company, sir.
We're launching our new website, orangeblossompilsner.com.
Beautiful.
And Orange Blossom Brewing will get you to the same place.
Of course. Smart, very smart.
The site, I for a long time, I thought our Facebook would carry us, but no, you need a bona fide website. We're going to have some t-shirts on there and such.
Yeah.
But don't hesitate to go just do a search in your Facebook browser for Orange Blossom Pilsner or Orange Blossom Brewing.
Absolutely.
And friend us, and that'll keep you up to date on what we're doing.
Yes.
And where the Oak Square is going to be.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Get it on that Oak Square. Oh, man, that sounds good. Tom, I'm so excited about that beer. just recently, I've been trying some of the oak age stuff. And when you're getting on it, if Tom's going to do it, I'm down for it. All right. We're going to play the game. This week's Choose a Cogburn versus the World. This year's the first one. It's our third anniversary show. Congratulations to us.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, congratulations to you. You finished 2015 with a record of 19-7.
Not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
I'm getting better, as you can see.
Yeah. I mean, your first year, you were 11-11-1. That one tie between you and Tom.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
And the only tie that will ever happen.
Only time that will ever happen. You're a part of history, Tom. Second year, you went 13-7. Winning record last year, 19-7.
Yeah.
You took the extra guests that we had and you stomped them all. Congratulations, sir. Starting a whole new year, you are now 0-0.
Sweet.
You're at 500.
So, I feel like a yellow belt about to fight a black belt.
I don't think so.
It really all depends on the game.
It depends on the game.
And how many of these I've
tried. And how many of these And I'll be honest, this is an easy game. This is an easy game, guy. I'm starting the year.
I hate it when he says that.
I'm starting the year with an easy one.
Because like he sits here and like thinks of all this stuff, and to him, it's easy because he's writing down the questions and the answers.
Alex Trebek thinks Jeopardy's easy.
Asshole.
This week's game is called Fill in the Blank, the Numbers Edition. I'm going to give you a title with a blank, and you tell me, you fill in the title, and what's missing is a number.
Yes.
Okay. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Drew, I'm going to let you go first. A and B is your two sections. Five of each. Which one do you want? Choose wisely, A or B?
B.
You want B. Here we go. What's the number that's missing from the title? Number one, blank angry men.
12.
Correct. Number two, I am number blank.
1.
Incorrect. I am number 4. Number three, passenger blank.
57.
All right. Number 4. This is blank.
40.
That is correct. And number 5, 13 going on blank.
30.
That is correct. You got 4 out of 5, sir. Here we go, Tom. You ready?
I think so.
Number 1, fill in the blank. Blank men out.
Took me a second. I know it.
0.
Ooh, 8. I'm sorry. 8 men out. Baseball movie with John Cusack. Number 2. Blank men and a baby.
It's either 2 or 3. I'm going to go 2.
Oh, it was 3. It was 3. Number 3. The blank year itch.
Oh, it'd have to be 7 year itch.
That's correct. Number 4. Blank days of night.
I'm going to stab in the dark with a 7.
30 days of night. I'm sorry. And number 4. No, that was number 4. And number 5. Buffalo blank.
6.
Buffalo 66. Oh, you're halfway there. I'm sorry, Tom.
Man.
Drew is the winner of that one. Congratulations, Drew.
Nice showing, sir.
Sound defeat.
You are 1-0 this year.
100% batting 100.
Going through these, I see that A was, I think it was a little harder than B. I thought 8 Men Out was easy. 8 Men Out's the one about
I don't know how I knew that, but I did.
Because I thought it was pretty popular. It's the one, John Cusack, he's part of the Chicago White Sox, the team that threw the World Series, and they put him on trial and all that stuff. But anyway.
Would you have gotten 4 out of 5 with my A questions?
Yes, I would have gotten 4 out of 5.
Which one would you have missed? Buffalo 66?
Buffalo 66.
That's a weird movie.
Yeah.
Christina Ricci, Vince Gallo. Congratulations, Drew. Okay, so people, OPP, drink it, buy it, share it, love it. Drew, where can people find you online?
At Antihero 419, all over the interwebs.
All right, there you go. And you can find me on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Follow the show at CrespoDiso. Cinema Crespies on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. Also, the show is brought to you by latestfilmtrailers.net. Go to latestfilmtrailers.net for the newest and latest film trailers on the internet. That's simple. Keep it simple. All right, what are we going to do next? What are we doing next here, Drew?
You tell me. It's your show, buddy.
I'm
so long for the ride.
Let's jump into Billy D's Death at the Movies. Our New York City senior correspondent hits us up every week, and we got a double dose. So here's that intro. Here we go, Juicy Cogburn. Hit us up. We have two Death of the Movies. Because he sent us one for Christmas week, but we did that special Christmas episode. So here we go. Number one.
Is that the first one?
Yeah, let's go.
You want to do it?
Let's go in chronological.
Okay. What is up, my dudes?
What's up, Billy?
While some of us are celebrating the holidays with the people we love, some of us view it as being stuck with people we hate. I seize this opportunity to willingly spend my time with some hateful people and one hate-filled person. I filled myself up with some soda, popcorn, hate, meat, soda, popcorn, and some more hate for Christmas. I caught the Hateful Eight in its 70mm roadshow version at Lincoln Square.
Nice.
And an hour and a half later, saw The Revenant in the same theater. Two movies, one day's, so much expectation.
That's a crazy amount of movie.
First, The Eight.
Okay, Hateful Eight from Billy Dee. Here we go.
There are the movies Tarantino made before Kill Bill,
yeah.
Kill Bill, and his later period films. I really think this is a tricky film, not just the finished film. Its tricks go from the page to the screen. This is an intimate, verbose script that could easily be a play, shot in one of the Midwest's most epic and most expensive formats ever made.
Yeah.
This is a film about the hypocrisy of America and the American experience down to its very tech specs. This is probably the most provocative film. Lots of internet articles will be written about things in it. It holds you hostage, pointing gigantic firearms directly into your face and blasting it with massive, oversized hatred. I liked it a lot. It gave me a lot to chew on. I want to see it again to really grasp it. See what was changed from the roadshow to the theatrical release. See it.
That 6-minute difference, yeah.
See it in 70mm if possible. That film glow. I followed that up with The Revenant. Glorious, brutal, breathtaking, simple. Give everyone but DiCaprio all the awards. I say that because clearly not winning has made him better and more powerful than we ever could have imagined. See this film, see it in the center, get your face ravaged by the awesome power of nature. Stay cool, Billy. I did a little Herzog right
there. Nature is out to destroy us.
It is, and apparently Leo gets destroyed by a bear.
Okay, so Billy D saw The Hateful Eight and The Revenant the same day. Loved them both, apparently.
Yes.
That's
a lot of snow, a lot of west.
That's a lot of movie in one day. I mean, I have high expectations for both of those films. I would want to see both those in the same day, but at the same time, it's like it's too much.
Yeah, especially the roadshow version. I mean, that was 3 hours by itself.
Yeah, it's 3 hours because of the intermission. Yeah, so the man was in the theater for 5.5 hours that day. Shout out. More than that, probably 7 hours. Yeah. Shout out to Billy D.
Yeah, seriously.
For working so hard and seeing so many movies. I mean, we already talked about Hateful Eight and The Revenant, how excited we are to see those.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about The Revenant next week.
Yes, we will.
When we actually do see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, God bless you. Silence these.
I silenced my sneeze for you.
I jumped the gun on it. This guy, if he sneezes 3 times in a row, you got to drink. Got to put that out there.
Just so you know.
We'll drink just in case.
All right. Time for the second Billy D's Death of the Movies.
Time for a second Billy D's Death of the Movies. okay. Where's the stop that? Stop that. Okay.
What is up, my dudes?
What's up, Billy?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Billy.
I spent the evening with my girlfriend at a movie theater, followed by midnight on the roof, watching all the fireworks Bushwick has to offer.
What a braggart.
I caught Annalisa at the Sunshine last night. I can't say much about this other than it is truly a Kaufman triumph. This fucking guy, Charlie Kaufman, this film is a unique experience unlike anything else. I read somewhere that the only way we get to see more films like this is to buy tickets to movies like this. I urge everyone to run out and see this. It doesn't have to make $1 billion, but seriously, do it for the movies. This is so ambitious, brave, creative, bizarre, and honest that it's just rare. I like my movies rare. Be cool. See Annalisa. Stay cool. Billy D.
That ties into what I was saying earlier about people going to see Star Wars four times opening weekend to help it break records.
Go see Annalisa four times.
Movies like Annalisa need support. They need people to see them in movie theaters. So then the people who hold the purse strings will be more willing to give $10, $15, $20 million to make these smaller, weirder movies. No. We're getting the Star Wars movie every year no matter what.
Yes.
For the foreseeable
guaranteed
future. That's their game plan.
Yeah.
You can spend your time and money on things like this where it's trickier. Charlie Kaufman is one of our best writers and artists working today.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's nowhere near as popular or well-known as he should be. I saw someone tweet this a while ago. We ignore Charlie Kaufman at our own peril.
Yeah.
You know.
He'll go away.
He will go away, or he won't be able to get stuff out there.
And then we'll be like, wait a minute, what happened to all this shit?
What happens to this amazing, unique voice that's speaking truth? Oh, we're all busy seeing Guardians of the Galaxy 8.
Disney's films.
Yeah. Disney's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Marvel is Disney, so yes.
Disney
owns
a quarter of everything.
Yeah, Disney just owns.
Along with the four or five other companies that own all the rest of the media. All the media is owned by five corporations, so... That's why it's a tricky situation. Thanks, Billy D. We appreciate it. You can hit him up on Twitter at I Love Blood. Also on Instagram at I Love Blood. I think pretty much all around the internet's I Love Blood. I think it's consolidated.
Yeah.
I think it's all.
I would hope so.
Like you over there.
Yeah.
As opposed to me.
I was way ahead on that shit.
Yeah, you were. Hotmail.
Forethought, my friend.
Thanks, Billy. We appreciate it. Okay, now, as we all know, this is the show of the people. We love the people. You guys listen to the show. You're the reason we do this to begin with. And I want to give you your voice.
I don't know about loving the people. I put up with the people.
Drew puts up with the people. I love the people. And I love the people's voice. And I love letting people get their viewpoints and their opinions and their questions out there. And that's why I came up with the Vox Populi, which does have its own intro. And if I turn the volume down, you won't be able to hear it. So here we go.
That moment you've all been waiting for. The world famous
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi.
Vox.
Juicy Cogburn, what are the people saying on the interwebs?
Sir, on the Twitter, at Rage Against Twit got at us.
What's up, Rage Against Twit?
He's got a Bone Tomahawk review haiku.
Bone Tomahawk?
Yes, Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk. This is a Kurt Russell cannibal western.
Committed Starcast, Prac FX lackluster, but gruesome debut. Okay.
I think it is the guy's first time. So he just says it's okay.
It's okay.
This is a movie where it played at the Enzian for like a week or so, and I didn't make it out there because they were doing like showing multiple movies at once, so it was limited screenings. I've heard from some people they've liked it a lot. Some people said it was okay, like Rage Against Twit or Homeboy, and some people who do not like it at all. So very divisive movie. Yeah. I know for a fact that it's on Amazon Prime.
Right now,
so people have access to that. They can watch it through there. That's probably how I'll end up watching. So it's on my list. I'm going to check it out. But my expectations are in check. You know, always gotta keep things in check.
At Mr. Nadathon got at us.
Nadathon!
He's got a mini review for Daddy's Home.
Daddy's Home. Okay, the Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell movie. All right.
Kind of a piece of shit with a couple chuckles. By a couple, I mean literally two.
Thanks, Nadathon. For letting us know. It's kind of what I said, too. Yeah, it's just an okay movie.
All right, on Facebook.
It's like something if you're flipping through on TBS on a Tuesday night and it's raining and you don't mind sitting through commercials.
Watch it.
Watch it.
Then. Okay.
That type of
movie. On Facebook.
Facebook, yeah, you hit us up on Facebook.
Billy D got at us.
Billy D.
He asks a question, Chris.
What's the question?
Why can't I get just one kiss?
know. Why?
Because he's ugly as sin. That's why.
Oh, that's not true, Billy. You're a handsome fellow. I don't know why. I don't know why you would say that. Is that a reference to a song? Sounds like a song.
No.
Can I just get one? Right?
Maybe. Or maybe maybe it's a movie quote that we're missing.
Isn't that a Hall & Oates song?
No, that's completely different.
The kiss.
That's on your list.
On my list.
Yeah.
Because not, your kiss.
You can't resist.
You can't resist. I'm going to sing it like Michael McDonald. Because your kiss is on my list.
Of the best things in life.
Oh my God. I would go see a Michael McDonald concert where he just covers Hall & Oates all day. That'd be amazing. She's a man eater.
Ernie Cantu got at us.
What's up, Ernie?
He asks, how good was Joy?
Joy was good. Talk about that on the first half of the show. I enjoyed it quite a bit. You can also check out my review at chriscrespo.com.
Ricardo Perez gets at us.
What's up, Ricardo?
He wants us to talk anything dealing with the new Star Wars remake / reboot / remix DJ Khaled Another One movie.
Yeah, we'll talk about Star Wars a little bit in the movie news section. But yeah, I mean, Star Wars all over the place.
Star Wars.
Tom, would you even, like, consider sitting down to watch the new one based on how much money it's made? Are you curious at all? Or are you totally fine with it just going away and you never see it?
I'd be happy to check it out. I wouldn't want to wait in line for it. Sure. And I wouldn't want to be in a full movie theater over it.
Sure, yeah.
And it would be a casual, you know, thing. I would be not a whole lot of passion or zeal in me. I'd just go check it out. Maybe and have popcorn.
Maybe if someone else rented it, brought it home, and like, yeah, sure, I'll sit on the couch and watch this. Not put too much investment into it, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be like...
And I realized a moment ago that I just am not into the science fiction stuff. I sat there and I looked at where my movie preferences are, and I have to finally realize that science fiction is probably not my bag.
Not your bag.
Sure, absolutely. Where would you go? Like I mentioned earlier, I'm into kung fu movies. I really like westerns. Are you a comedy guy, drama? Do you like heist?
I like adventure films. I love 007 films.
Spy movies, okay.
Yeah. I love just good action-packed stuff.
Sure. Did you see the new Mad Max?
Yes, I did.
That's an action-packed movie. It's a two-hour car chase movie.
Fuck, what an amazing movie.
I kept waiting for some movie part of it, but there was no movie.
No, it was just action like, and fire.
It all happened on the move.
Go get them. Violence. Kill them. Yeah. Shoot them. Bang. Boom.
We got to get to this location. Oh, we're there. Now we got to turn around and head back. It's kind of the genius of that one. It's very simple. Like, who needs plot? They did that whole movie without a screenplay. As if it wasn't obvious.
So fucking amazing.
The whole thing were just storyboards.
Yep.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's a very visual movie. You don't even have to know the language that they're speaking to be able to watch it. Just watch it. We'll talk about some Star Wars more in a little bit.
Justin Davis got at us.
What's up, Justin?
He said he saw The Hateful Eight and he loved it.
Cool.
Great performances all around, but I think Walton Goggins stole the show. Thoughts?
Walton Goggins is pretty great.
Yeah.
Walton Goggins is a good actor. If I say Walton Goggins, anything come to mind, Tom?
Negative.
He's one of these guys.
Justified.
He's one of these guys where he's been in a bunch of stuff lately, but people don't really know.
He's been in a lot of stuff for a while. Yeah, it's just no, exactly. No, well, he's one of those guys.
So he doesn't get typecast. You know, that's the opposite of getting typecast.
He kind of does though. Having Walton Goggins in The Hateful Eight makes a lot of sense.
He is kind of he does
a lot of westerns.
Sort of Western mentality
or cop stuff,
like a country hillbilly type of mentality, but sometimes he flips it a little bit,
gets a little Texas on you,
or he'll seem like a smarter hillbilly than you expect, something like that. I think it's his face. He has a very specific face that's like good for that type of
and
thing.
A very silly name.
Walton Goggins. It is a very Western name. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage,
Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins. Opening up for
Conway Twitty,
Brooke Spencer's,
and Conway Twitty.
He's great in this movie, Walton Goggins.
He really was,
and but he's always good though. Like he's really good in Django Unchained.
Yeah, he was.
I guess now second Tarantino movie in a row. Maybe
he's one of those guys now.
He's gonna be using them more now.
Yeah. He's in.
He's one of these guys who likes to use the same actors over and over.
Yeah.
You know, Samuel Jackson, I think, is in almost every single one of his films.
Which is cool because I'd like to see some more Channing Tatum.
Yeah, Channing Tatum. And he's good.
He is.
He's quite good, actually. That role originally was offered to Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Oh, awesome,
but scheduling conflicts. Oh. And then Channing stepped in and then
did it worked.
And he did his Channing tattooing thing.
Yeah, yeah, which works.
Yeah, I like that guy. He's
Viggo's got quite the cult following, doesn't he?
He does. Viggo's awesome.
He does, and I love now going back and seeing Viggo movies from before Lord of the Rings, before everyone knew who he was.
Well, and
he popped up a lot in the 90s.
But he was... He was a different actor in the 90s. Like, he was doing, like, the chick flicks and the romantic stuff.
He also did A Perfect Murder, the Hitchcock remake with Michael Douglas and Gwyneth Paltrow. And the chick flick, he did one with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
What's the one where he had this kid in the future where he was trying to say, you know... Little boy.
The Road. Was it The
Road?
The Road, yes.
The post-apocalyptic one, yeah. The Road. That's a hard movie.
Yeah. God, that's so good, though.
It's a brutal, dark movie. It's Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
That guy's like, he looks at the American dream in the face and he's like, this is shit. we scalped Indians to get here.
Viggo does some music stuff, too.
And a lot of painting and poetry. He's a published poet where's he from? Sweden, I think? Or wherever he's from in Scandinavia.
And he and Buckethead, for some reason, share some stuff.
The guitarist?
Yeah.
Really? I would not be surprised.
I think they're both under the Travis Dickerson label.
Oh, interesting.
They're under the same music label. So it'd be interesting to check out some of his music work if you like him.
Viggo is a modern Renaissance man for sure. For sure. He does a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously most popular for being Aragorn.
Yes.
For having a sword.
The king.
For swinging a sword. Good for you, Viggo.
Samantha Hart gets at us.
Samantha Hart, that's Sam from Tom and Dan.
Have you seen the movie Primer? If so, what did you think?
Primer was a past Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. It's one of my
it's an amazing movie.
One of my more favorite time travel movies.
Well, just because it's for being such like a crazy and mind expansive movie, it is very small and personal.
It's a very small contained film.
No.
It's about Tom. This movie is about these two guys who they're working out of their garage. And they're trying to invent something that has one purpose, like a totally different purpose. They accidentally invent a tiny time machine
that can go back in the time like 24 hours.
Yeah, they by accident. So then they try for like, well, how can we actually use this and make it bigger? And
the Lotto.
The whole movie is them. They make the machine, they use it, and then shit just starts going kind of crazy as they try to use it to their advantage, make some money, stock market type of stuff. But unforeseen consequences start happening and they got to deal with them. There become multiple versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through the movie, you like kind of lose track of who's who. It's a kind of a confusing movie, but on purpose because it's time travel.
Yeah.
Who says it's supposed to be linear and make sense and all that stuff, you know? And the cool thing about the movie, it's this guy, Shane Carruth. It's his first film. Made it for $7,000.
And if you think this movie's confusing, do not watch the rest of his movies.
Yeah, he only has one other movie that he just came out with like 2 years ago or 3 years ago called Upstream Color.
I'm not even sure if I understand it to this day.
It took me, I had to watch that movie 3 times and like do a bunch of reading online and like look at a diagram. They put out one of their posters is a diagram and I was like, oh, wait a second. And things started making sense to me. The Primer, the first time I watched it, I fell in love with it right away. Upstream Color, first time I watched it, I had a feeling.
Excuse me?
I was like, I thought it might have been an Emperor's New Clothes type of situation. A lot of people are like, oh, this movie's amazing. Then I watch it, I'm like, I don't even know what happened.
Like, I think I know maybe kind of what happened.
Yeah, I think these are all people that are like, they want to say it's great because they want to seem cool and smart and hip. But then on multiple viewings, I have thoroughly fallen in love with the movie as I have figured it out. And it is... When you break down a story, it's actually a pretty simple story, surprisingly. But and I wrote my quote review isn't even a review. It's like 5,000 words long. My average review is like 800 words. It's like 5,000 words long. Half of it is...
It's more of a dissertation.
Half of it is trying to recap what actually happened. This is what I think happens in the movie. And then the second half of it is like, this is what I think all that means. And then it got into this long thing about just upsetting the apple cart of the entertainment industry and artistic ambitions and stuff and that. I think my close read got a little too close, but still, it's that type of movie. And Primer is a similar way. It's a very beautiful, well-made, very low-budget film. If you like Primer, Sam, I recommend checking out Upstream Color, but be prepared. Pay attention.
Actually, if you like Primer, I recommend Time Crimes.
Oh, Time Crimes. I wish Time Crimes was still on Netflix.
So good.
That's a Spanish film.
That is one of the most fun time travel movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's called Cronos Crimenis.
Yes.
Time Crimes is the English language version. I saw that at the end.
Yeah, we did.
And it's about a... a dude invents a time machine.
And essentially
what happens is...
An idiot falls in it.
Yeah, an idiot falls in it. So, and then he has to keep using it over and over. But it's at the beginning of the invention of the time machine, so he's running out of... He can only go back so far. So at one point in the movie, like 3/4 of the way through the movie, the guy essentially invents a time machine, turns it on, and immediately someone comes out of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the hell?
What, excuse me?
I just invented this thing, and it's already in use. It's crazy. It's a weird, like, Hitchcockian mystery thing set in the woods in Spain.
But it's so funny.
But with time travel.
And it's so funny.
It's funny and weird and very cool. Time crimes. That's a good one. I wish that was more really available for people to watch, because it's worth it. Yeah, Sam, great movie. Shane Carruth is an interesting filmmaker. The Modern Ocean is the next one. It's going to be
And last but certainly not least, Paul Hine gets at us.
What's up, Paul?
Congrats on your 3 years.
Oh, what a nice guy.
And he has a little Southpaw review.
Southpaw. Okay. That's the Jake Gyllenhaal boxing movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Southpaw. This felt like a Lifetime movie with boxing as a backdrop. Mm-hmm. Everything in this movie is predictable and boring. Mm-hmm. It's a shame Gyllenhaal got in such great shape for this because there just aren't enough boxing scenes.
Yeah, and the movie, it's an okay movie. I wanted it to be better. I do feel like Jake Gyllenhaal like went so hard for that role and worked so hard and gave a crazy good performance for a movie that ultimately just isn't...
Kind of shat on itself.
Yeah, isn't worthy of that performance, you know? Like, he's in an Oscar-level movie, but the movie itself is
not Oscar-level at all.
It's B-level. But I like Jake Gyllenhaal, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of Jake, then go see it. If not, then totally... Screw it. Who doesn't matter?
Yeah, I guess.
Totally forgettable.
I guess. So is that it for the Box Spotlight? Thank you, people. You can also email us, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com, and we will read your stuff on the show. A couple quick movie news stories here. I have some quotes from George Lucas.
Okay.
Okay, because George Lucas, he sold Star Wars.
He
was done with it. He wanted to make his own Star Wars movies.
That nobody wants to watch.
No one else wanted to make them. So he sold it to Disney, donated all the money to a bunch of causes, and let other people make Episode 7, right? And then recently, he gave one... His first comment about the movie was that when he saw it, he said...
The backhanded comment.
It was a backhanded compliment. He said, the fans are really going to like this movie. As in, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But the fans are going to like it. He elaborated a little bit on a Charlie Rose interview that he did. And let me see. He got some interesting quotes here. Let's see. That's about him just making movies in general. Where'd it go? It's all the way up here. Well, basically, this is what he said. I'll just
paraphrase.
I'll just paraphrase. When he wanted to make Episodes 7, 8, and 9, he wanted to take Star Wars into a new direction. He wanted to come up with new characters, new worlds, new everything.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to redo anything. He wanted something totally new. Everyone else was like, no, we want a Star Wars that's like the original Star Wars. So that's why I said, I'm out.
Well, that's what we got, too.
You guys, here's the property. Give me money. We're all done. And yes, Drew, that is exactly what we got. We got our retro film. We got Star Wars Episode 7, which is... an inverse in many ways of Episode 4. It's
4 and 5.
It is made to feel like it came out of the 70s.
And that's what it feels like.
And Lucas is right. The fans love it.
Yeah.
And he is not into that at all.
Yeah.
Retro filmmaking is what
I call
it.
I could see that.
Yeah. So it makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
He wanted to do something different.
Well, exactly. And he's already been there and done that.
Yeah.
He already himself created these three amazing works.
He did that, and then even the prequels, you can see how they're so different from the original.
Yeah.
Now you know why.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he wanted to do something even more different
Even more different. Who's to say if it would have been good or bad, but it definitely would not have been what the fans wanted.
Lucas, as great as a filmmaker he is, hasn't directed a good movie since the 70s.
Correct.
Since he did THX 1138, American Graffiti, the original Star Wars. I mean, since then, any movie he's directed has been like, ugh.
Yeah.
Even once he's produced, have been.
Yeah.
So, and then he says this thing about popular filmmaking, which is interesting. He says, popular is okay with me. I think it's a very important part of society. If you're making a work of art or a film or whatever and nobody sees it, it does nobody any good. But then he goes on to say, I'm going to make movies that only I want to see and I want to do. I've always wanted to do that. I fell into popular movies by accident. I always disliked Hollywood theatrical movies. I didn't want anything to do with them.
He did. Nobody thought Star Wars was ever going to be any... I mean, the only reason why George Lucas is who George Lucas is because Fox didn't give a shit about that movie.
Yeah, that's true. Fox,
Fox was like, we don't care. Take the, we don't care. Marketing rights, it's all yours. Take it. We don't give a fuck.
And then it made him a ton of money. And then Fox was like, oh, okay, we can get in those on the Star Wars.
Exactly.
Game. So he's one of these guys. Francis Ford Coppola did this for a while. Still was doing this, where he's like, these guys have all this money. And they stop making the big budget movies. And they're like, oh, I just want to make small movies that I care about, that I want to finance. But then they never do it.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, it's because they have to answer to themselves. And for the most part, I mean... You know, I mean, creatives have to answer to somebody. Somebody has to be like, listen, this is what you're doing, or they'll just...
Hard to be self-starting?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Artists aren't good managers.
Exactly.
No, of time.
Of anything.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
No.
Well, someone's got to get on this guy's rich ass. Yeah, exactly. Who's going to do it?
The guy's exactly. So rich, he answers. He has his own ranch named after one of his characters from a movie.
Unless his wife. Like, tells him to...
I mean, get cracking. The man started his own multi-million dollar special effects business.
Yeah.
With three movies.
Industrial Light and Magic, which they've worked on, like, something
everything.
Like, on 7 of the top 10 highest grossing films of all time, their work has been featured.
And it started with Star Wars.
They just did the Kennedy Center Honors that was on TV a week ago. I've been watching that, like, the last few years now. I've been checking it out. And Lucas was honored. This year, and they did this whole presentation. Spielberg and Scorsese came out and said all this nice stuff, and did the big musical thing. And it really does remind you, yes, George Lucas has contributed a lot to pop culture, and he's done a lot of great stuff.
But that was not his intent.
No,
apparently not. He didn't want to contribute to pop culture. He just wanted to make something neat and little and fun that he wanted to see.
His art got embraced by pop culture,
yes.
Exactly,
and that will destroy people sometimes.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, I was about to say.
With Nirvana.
Point.
Yeah. He wanted,
case and point.
He was making music that was the opposite of what was popular. He was like, I just want to rip off the Pixies.
Yeah.
But he managed to somehow write music that just, it touched that nerve. It spoke to people. It got people interested. He became the thing that he hated.
Yes.
Yeah. How about that documentary where...
Soaked in Bleach?
That it looks like Courtney whacked him.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that one yet. It's funny, two Cobain documentaries came out. This past year is that one, which is on Netflix. But the other one that I want to see is called Montage of Heck, which people have been loving. They love, love, love it. And I haven't had a chance to see it in the theater. Apparently, the movie starts with like a little pop-up thing. It says, play this movie loud. Yeah, that's the whole point of it. And man, I really want to see that. I don't know about the Soaked in Bleach one, though. When I was younger, I was like, oh, yeah, sure, she killed him. But I don't know, it seems a little irresponsible now.
No, I can see it.
I can see it.
Things are crazy.
You'd be surprised, though. I mean, yes, Kurt Cobain spoke to, you know, Nirvana was big. Nirvana was huge.
They're the biggest.
But who's to say that they would have reached the status that they had if Cobain hadn't killed himself? I mean,
they were doing like arena tours.
He went out on top. If we had waited to see the downward slide, would not have been the person that he was.
I remember reading an article in, I think it was Guitar World.
I mean, that's why anybody even gives a fuck about James Dean now.
Yeah, because they die when they're young, so it's all mystique. I remember reading an article. It was right around when they were opening up the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the first time. It was like early 90s, I believe. And someone wrote an article that was like an imaginary opening ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But it was in a world in which Jimi Hendrix was still alive.
That changes everything.
And Hendrix performed at the opening ceremony, and the article described him as being overweight, and, you know, like he's sweating up there.
Yeah.
But he did play some like older, or he launched into the Star Spangled Banner and did a version of that, and you could see like the old magic that people were enchanted by in the 60s, and that's probably a similar thing. He died young. So you never see any downfall.
No.
It's all just
the meteoric rise and then the explosion.
It happened most recently with Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
People deify her because she died, you know, 27, 28 or whatever. Janis Joplin's another one.
Same thing.
Jim Morrison.
Like I said,
Jim Morrison would have got old and fat and sloppy and Elvis-like.
Exactly. Well, he would have. Yeah. much like...
like Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer, who played him in the movie, he would have gone in, yes, Fat Val.
Jim Morrison would have gone Fat Val.
Yep.
Fat Jim.
I see Morrison more in a Hemingway-esque sense. I think he would have
mythical.
Evolved in that direction a little bit more. He was really intelligent. And he,
oh, yeah.
He, you know, there was some substance behind all that craziness. It really was.
Yeah, yeah. He does get dismissed a lot as like just like a blues man ripoff and kind of a shock value of some of the things he did back in the day. But he did have more in his mind than just supposedly pulling out his dick.
And he thought he was living up to his responsibility as an artist to a drunken idiot like that.
Yeah.
He just thought that they went hand in hand, and that's how you're supposed to create.
That was definitely much more the accepted. Well, I guess it's still kind of an accepted stereotype today.
Oh yeah,
you know, when Scott Weiland dies, no one's surprised.
Yeah, who's Scott Weiland? Go figure.
Yeah, yeah, because it's part of the rock and roll lifestyle.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
And then, well, that and I find people that are on the junk usually make pretty good music.
On the junk,
and
man.
Then when they get off the junk, usually not so good.
Off the junk.
And he, like that Miami thing where he really enjoyed, Jim really enjoyed being able to work and taunt a crowd. I mean, after he got his, you know, he was just a young punk kid when he started, but after doing a few tours, a few years, he's going, wow, look what I can get these bitches to do.
Yeah.
And that's when it all kind of...
I can get the police to show up and... Yeah.
It all came down to a head in Miami when he supposedly exposed himself.
Supposedly.
He was just taunting the crowd. So,
yeah.
You want to see it?
To the point where...
The crowd was going fucking nuts.
To the point where...
And that was his game.
And there were people who were like, I swear I saw it. And there were other people were like, no, it didn't happen. You know, they're all at the same event, but it was such a frenzy.
And he was working the crowd hard, and he really dug the
shit
out.
A real showman, then, Mr. Morrison. Let me see here. Am I giving you another? Oh, I'll just mention this real quick because you might find this interesting. You know, there's a Mummy ride out in Universal Studios Hollywood.
I love it. I love one part of it.
Well, you like the one in Orlando.
Yes.
The one in Hollywood is like half that version.
Lame.
Well, all the fire stuff gone.
What?
Because it had less room.
That's the best part. Seriously, the best part of that ride is
It is the best part. I agree.
You start and you look up, and there's a fire
on the ceiling, and then you drop down. Yeah, and it's super cool. Yeah. None of that's in the Universal Studios Hollywood. They're getting rid of that ride, and they're building in its place a ride based on the movie The Secret Life of Pets, which hasn't even come out yet, but they're already planning on building a ride for that movie. That's how much they believe in that movie.
Excuse me.
The Secret Life of Pets, which I've seen the trailer for
a couple times. Yeah, I've seen it.
Actually, I think it looks pretty funny.
It's has to be part of the media push.
No.
It would absolutely be a part of the ride. You got to imagine Universal has some ownership in that picture.
Illumination is the animation company that produced the movie, and I believe Universal is like their umbrella.
It's all furry puppies and kittens. That's why you like it.
Yeah, but being cute and talking. But here's the real thing I want to bring up about this. Because Universal, you know, and some of this stuff is going to start making its way over here. Because even though Universal Studios Hollywood is the original production studio, the original theme park, all the money and all the juice comes to the Orlando one. And that's the big theme park, right? But they also have the one in Hong Kong. Exactly. Wizarding World of Harry Potter. They're finally getting one of those in Hollywood. They got a new type of ride that they've been using in theme parks in like China and stuff. That's coming to Universal Hollywood, and we'll be seeing it soon here in Orlando. It's a motion ride, right? So you're in a car, but it's not on a track. So imagine something like Spider-Man, where you're going from room to room, and you're in the car that's on a track, and it's moving around on the track. Instead, you're in a car that's all like motion sensor, like a Roomba.
Okay.
So your car goes into a room, and it's a big open room with like obstacles in the way, and the car moves around in that space autonomously. But because of the open nature of the rooms, if you go back on the ride again, it's going to go around the room in a different way.
Oh, okay.
It's just however it makes its way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be random each time.
Interesting.
So even though you're going on the same ride, it's going to be a little different each time out. And then also now you go into it helps the illusion of the ride. Because now when you go into a new section of the ride, you don't look down and you see the tracks. You don't see everything that's making it move. All that stuff is now becoming more and more invisible. So I find that fit. I like to talk about the theme park stuff, right? Because we have the theme parks here, and it's movie related. And
now, one of the rides I remember that didn't go anywhere but was pretty intense was the Hanna-Barbera out at...
That was awesome.
I love that ride so much. And it was that one's just you're in your seat, and the seat moves.
Yeah, the seat didn't go anywhere. You just had that big 3D movie in front of you.
Right.
And that thing pitched and thralled and the way it brings
it
back,
it makes it feel like you're moving, which is super cool. That Hanna-Barbera ride since changed from that to Jimmy Neutron. So then it was all Nickelodeon characters, right? Which made sense. It's right next to Nickelodeon Studios. But that only lasted like maybe 2 years. And then it got switched over again to Despicable Me, which is the same company as The Secret Life of Pets. And since they changed over to Despicable Me, it's the same ride. You're in the seat. It's the screen. You're moving it around. But since they changed it to that property, the line to get on that thing is always like one of the longest in the parks all the time. Families love the characters. They love the ride.
So the ride's the same.
Ride's the same. They just change
the shtick is different.
Yes. They change the characters on the outside. They change the video. That's it.
The ride needed no changing.
No, the ride itself is genius. It's been since the Hanna-Barbera. That was like one of the original ones in the 90s. And it's still the same thing.
As a stagehand, I was there weren't many TV and films going on while Universal was being built.
Sure.
So I found myself working for a lot of the scenery companies, hanging the scenery
in
those buildings. And I hung a majority of the scenery in the Hanna-Barbera
ride, really?
So I got to know it pretty well.
That's pretty cool. That's my favorite part of a lot of of walking around the park, seeing the set decoration, essentially, and all the detail that puts
on. Oh, man, that Harry Potter stuff is insanely detailed.
Yeah, you walk around the new Harry Potter sections. Man, people putting them together must have had so much fun.
Oh, like, yeah.
Recreating all that stuff and making
huge dorks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the type of stuff that makes me wish I liked Harry Potter more.
Yeah.
Because then, man, I'd be geeking out. Like with The Simpsons. I love the whole Simpsons section. All right. Brings us to the end of the show, which means it's time for the lightning round, Tom. Lightning round intro is right here.
We give you the questions. You give us the answers. Time for the lightning round.
All right, Tom, I have 10 questions. I need 10 answers. Are you ready, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Drew, start the clock.
There you go.
Number one, what is your favorite year?
Wow.
Yeah.
1999.
Number two, do you dance when no one is looking?
Yes.
Number three, what is your favorite midnight snack?
Bowl of cereal.
Number four, what is the most useless class in high school?
Underwater basket weaving.
Number five, do you use umbrellas?
I have one in my truck and occasionally do use it.
Okay, number six. Why is abbreviated such a long word?
So you can abbreviate it.
All right. You need something abbreviated. That makes sense. Number seven. Why does a round pizza come in a square box?
Round boxes are really hard to make.
All right. There you go. Number eight. Can a hearse carrying a corpse use the carpool lane?
Absolutely.
Number nine. What is beauty?
What is beauty? Wow, that is...
What the hell kind of question is that?
It's a question.
What is beauty?
What is beauty?
It is something that elicits your senses and lights them up with feelings of joy.
Oh, I like that. Should be in a dictionary. Number 10. What level of importance must a person have before they are considered assassinated instead of just murdered?
Millionaire.
Millionaire. Murder some millionaires.
That's easy.
They're assassinated. That is pretty easy. Let's go assassinate some millionaires.
Let's do it.
Bastille Day is here. Thank you, Tom. It is time for the very end of the show. Swag bag time. You get your prizes, as you know well. We have four bags. Please choose one of the bags and see which one you make it to take home today. We're going with the third one. All right, give it to Drew. Drew's going to go ahead and break the bag out and tell everyone what you may get to take home today.
Sir, you may get to take home a 4-puzzle pack of Star Wars puzzles.
Yeah, talk about how much you
seeing how you care about Star Wars so much.
Such a rabid fan.
8 jokes and gags, 3-style squirt gum.
There you go. Offer someone some gum. and then squirt them in the face with water.
We've got you a random Marvel 500 figure. If you're confused as to what they are, if you take a look behind you, there's a tiny little green man back there. That is a Marvel 500 figure.
So, but you don't know which one. It could be a yellow man. It could be a red man.
You get a Crespo Diso
bootleg edition.
Bootleg edition of The Perfect Storm on DVD.
Starring Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney.
And a bunch of Crespo Diso stickers.
But the Crespo Diso stickers. Tom, all of these can be yours. You can take home that swag bag, play with the puzzles, or we put it away and you take what's in the box that Drewster Cogburn has right over here.
Now, you remember I used to work for Let's Make a Deal, so I'm pretty good with all the shtick. Now, that's a big, pretty box. It probably got a pile of dog poo up in it.
I wouldn't necessarily put dog poo in there.
But perhaps...
Now, I am going to, if I deny the box, I'm going to see what I missed, right?
Maybe. We can talk about that off mic. Technically, you're not supposed to, but you are, Tom.
Okay.
May let you.
Well, that makes me want the box.
Then it's up to you. We can put the bag away, you take what's in the big old box, or we put the box away, and you take home what you already know, which is in the bag, stickers, puzzles, toys, joke gum.
You guys are fucking sneaky.
Let's make a deal, Tom.
The big pretty box or the little bag with the trinkets? Could be a Rolls Royce in that box.
It could be keys. Could be keys or Rolls Royce. Notice there are no holes in the box, which means no live animal.
That's a good start.
That means the animal's probably dead.
Because we forgot to put the holes in there.
I'm going to take the box.
Taking the box. Here we go, Tom. Go ahead and pop the top off. Reach inside. Well, it's nothing's going to pop out at you, so you can... And go ahead and reach in, pull it out. What do you got? What does it say on the package?
A Star Wars projector flashlight!
Oh, I want that so bad!
It's a projector.
I want to take the box. It has to be really
May
close
the
to the
wall. May the fourth be with you!
May the fourth be with you, yeah. Put it on your feet on your hand. It's an image from the movie. Or it's a movie poster.
Well, it's one of the original movies.
It's like the Empire movie.
Aww. You guys are too much.
Hey, well, no, also make sure you take home a bunch of stickers, too, because we have a shit ton of them that we got to get rid of.
Nice.
Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
You guys rock. I love coming in here. I think that, you know, my beer is cool, so you kind of bring me in for that. and then you get a good movie story every once in a while,
hell
too.
Yeah.
So that behind-the-scenes stuff. So I feel comfortable here,
that
and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. I'm glad you feel comfortable with us.
You are very cool, too, Tom.
Yeah, you're super cool, man. We love having you around.
This is easy. You know, as I woke up this morning and go, yeah, I get to go, and instead of going, oh, fuck, whatever. Yeah.
Just hanging out for a couple hours, having a good time, man. Thank you again for being on our other anniversary show. I think you're good luck. You're good luck for the show. We appreciate it. Drew, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
And thank you, everyone at home, for listening to the show, downloading. We appreciate it. Rate us and review us. Share us. And remember, break up the big banks, support R-rated movies, read more books, and, of course, be excellent to each other in 2016. We'll be back next week.
Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. 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 Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso.
Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso.